be startup proceedings. Committee on Public Accounts. We have the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services. We have the Department, and we have management of the two privately, or the two PPPs. The objective of our meeting is to ensure that the mandate of Parliament is carried out. And the mandate of Parliament is to ensure that there is effective oversight. Now, in our own understanding, effective oversight means that there must be services, and that those services must be, or the costs must be justified by the services. So we're going to expect the management, as we've done with the department, to briefly run through your operation. We will then allow for members of Parliament to interrogate the end objective really is to make sure that as an extension to the Department of Correctional Services, you are advancing the mission and vision of correctional services. Ultimately, that's what we want to see. Because if you're not doing that, then we might as well close shop. We might as well close shop, because that's what we expect from the department. And that's what we'd expect from yourselves. Also, the department's cost to PPPs was in excess of 670 million rand last year. We'd want you to convince us that that's money well spent. If not, again, I'm saying that we will close shop. Ultimately, that's what it's about. So I want to up front be able to indicate to you that we're very serious about service delivery. We're very serious about money spent. And in your presentations, you'd have to cover that, because it's going to be covered or touched upon by members of Parliament. If they don't, I'll be disappointed. So that is the objective. We will then afford our visitors to introduce themselves, starting from here. We also have, from the department, I'm hoping, individuals who are eyes and ears of the department within the institution. That's what I'm expecting, or at least somebody that can answer questions on behalf of the department. In terms of the day-to-day running of the Constitution, please forgive my voice, I seem to be struggling today. So we'll allow our visitors to introduce themselves so that members know who we're talking to. We will then afford the management an opportunity to do their presentations. I'm led to believe that we should have certain members of the Portfolio Committee try aside of the presentations. I'm not sure of scope of this, but all members of Parliament have had prior time to the presentation, so that hopefully doesn't take long. It's the engagement that we are interested in after the presentation. We will then afford the... I don't know if you have an order amongst yourself, if you've agreed on an order. If you haven't agreed on an order between the two management... my boss indicates that Mangaung will go first, and thereafter we will have Kutama. So Mangaung will go first in terms of their presentation, and then we will have Kutama. But our agenda would also accommodate the department 10 minutes to do an introduction, if you want to. And then half an hour, I think it's too much, quite frankly. But you've got, what about 30 minutes, Mr. Fenter and Mr. Nguyenya, to do your presentation? And similarly, Mr. Pillay and Mr. McCartney, you've got 30 minutes to give us your presentation. As I indicated, we have seen them, so we really don't need the DHL members will be able to follow. The agenda makes accommodation for tea and then for discussion. And National Treasury, please feel free to participate. That's all. Thank you very much. So that is how we're going to proceed today. If we could afford you a few minutes of introduction. I know I'm informed that you've got an actual presentation. So could you combine your introduction together with your presentation? Is that okay? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and morning, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Joe Marco, currently the Director of Contract Management, overseeing the management of the two projects. We are pleased to have been invited to come here to talk about the two projects. Our instruction in brief was to give a brief introduction as well as to to indicate what was the original rationale for the two projects. Some of the information has already been presented to this committee before, particularly on the rationale for the two private prisons. Our relationship now with the two partners has been it's about 8 years, 7 years of operation, 8 years in the case of Mangaung, and 7 years in respect of Kutamas and Chumuli. The two PPP correctional centers were opened in 2001 and 2002, respectively. So if you calculate the period from that time, it gives us a period of 8 years and 7 years in operation. And the fundamental principles were value for money, risk transfer, and affordability. Parties to the contract. We have there the Republic of South Africa and Bloemfontein Correctional Contract. In the case of Bloemfontein, is the main partners, and the contract is for 25 years. And for operations, we have the shareholders on the far on the right hand side. There is Old Mutual, G4S, 10 Alliance, Fikile Mangaung, Ikwezi Community Trust, and you can see the percentage of shareholding capacity there. In the case of Kutama Sintumule, the main parties to the contract, the government and South African Custodial Services, and operations is South African Custodial Management. And you can see the shareholders on the far right being South African Custodial Management and Kansani Corrections. The current status, Mangaung Correctional Center, I've already indicated that it was opened on the 1st of Baha in 2001. Certified normal accommodation to 928, population to 928, type of correctional center is maximum, and the contractual period is 25 years. So out of the 25 years, we are left with about 7 years for the fixed fee. As you know, that you've got the variable fee as well as the fixed fee. The fixed fee is only for a period of 15 years. And the variable fee for 25 years. Kutama Sintumuni does open on the 1st March 2002, certified normal accommodation 3024. Population the same, type of correctional center also maximum, and the contractual period is 25 years. And scope of operations, that is mentioned in Schedule A, B, C, D of the contract. Schedule A, B, C talks about the construction, the equipment, and the maintenance. Schedule D is all our operational specifications. I don't think we have the time to go into that, but briefly go in terms of Schedule D. We've got Goal 1 there, which makes provision for the safe custody of inmates. Goal 2, maintaining order, control, discipline, and safe environment. Goal 3, providing decent conditions and meeting inmates. All those specifications are things that we look into when we monitor the contract on a daily basis. Goal 4, proceed. Providing structured day program. Goal 5, preparing inmates for their own return to community. Goal 6, delivering prison services. And goal 7, community involvement. Those are the main things that we look at. And the risk profile, the design and construction delays in construction, no payment until completed, failure to provide facilities specified, cost overruns on construction, maintenance, and the operations. This profile continued, the insurance, the available bed spaces, technology changes in case of availability of bed spaces. We've got to ensure that every bed is occupied on a daily basis. Otherwise, there will be no need for us to pay them on a monthly basis. But the onus of making sure that that takes place lies with the Department of Correctional Services. So, and to in order to ensure that there's always available bed spaces, we have created a pool next to a prison, which is next to one of the PPP prisons, to make sure that we always have prisoners or offenders available in the case, in the event of transfers or in the event of death. So there will be always an offender to replace the one being transferred, to make sure that the per capita cost that they pay can be justified. Management of operations, I've given you the structure of the directorate from head office. It's myself there at the top, director contract management, and I've got three deputies. But the most important one is the one in the center, the director, deputy director contract compliance. His functions mainly, including mine, are to ensure that monitoring takes place at the two private prisons and that meetings take place. You'll hear more about how we go about managing and ensuring that there's compliance at this private prison later on during the presentation. Quality and quantity control of services. As you all know, that the source of our relationship or the basis for our relationship is a contract, the two concession contracts between the two parties that governs the relationship. And the contracted operators function independently. DCS Contract Management Directorate is a regulatory body that must manage the contract and ensure that inspections and audits are performed regularly at the two PPP correctional centers. And regional commissioners to have oversight function on the management of the two centers. In terms of monitoring on a daily basis, we have the DCS controller with four office officials monitoring the prison on a daily basis. And we also have the supervisory committee, of which Mr. Nguba is the chairperson, together with two independent experts to ensure that to adjudicate over any disputes between ourselves and the contractors, to adjudicate over breaches of a contract, and also to undertake an annual review. We also have the inspectorate as an overseeing body, as well as the auditor, the audit and the auditor general's office, which are from time to time we conduct inspections and audits. And we also have, as an oversight body there, we have the Judicial Inspectorate, that have people on site, the inspectors on site, also to oversee the day-to-day operations of the prison. Monitoring is done by first the controller, who are on site together with his staff, and the Directorate Contract Management in head office also plays a similar role, but we also have an advisory role to play for the controller in the event of any uncertainties in terms of whether to issue breaches. Any disputes related to the contract will be our first, the first level of making sure within DCS to make sure that before we proceed to the supervisory committee or if a matter has to be referred to arbitration, there is merit. DCS will make sure that there is merit in the case. Why? Why? Because there are costs involved with any referral to the supervisory committee as well as cases for arbitration. Our budget, in short, as you've alluded to, Mr. Chairperson, our current budget for this 2009-2010 with the services index fee is about 566 million, and the fixed fee is 194,734, and it is the fixed fee that I've indicated will be falling off very soon within a period of 15 years. So, in terms of the operations, I'll leave it to my two PPP partners. The challenges that we have, these are some of the incidences that we have had in the two prisons. Gang fights, sometimes, hunger strikes, reclassification of inmates, which is which appears to be a problem now. Why I'm saying it appears to be a problem, I've already indicated that the two prisons are maximum prisons. And then from time to time, most of the offenders, all the offenders must be evaluated and reclassified into medium prisons, medium offenders. And that will necessitate movement away out of the prison from time to time. So, and given the fact that the two prisons are far placed, sometimes it is very, very difficult to find maximum offenders within the prison, within the area from where the prison has been built. It's very much difficult to have enough offenders come meeting that category. So some of the offenders have to be transferred as far as Pretoria to Mangaung to fill up the spaces there. But that is a challenge that we have, but I think we're managing it quite well from time to time. As well as requests for transfers, we've got a lot of offenders asking for transfers, provision of ARVs, which is also a challenge, and medical releases. Those are some of the challenges that I can think of at the moment. But I can assure this House that for the 8 years and 7 years that we have had the relationship with the two partners, I think and I can vouch that operations have been going very, very well. That will be the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, sir. Could we then ask the management of Mangaung to introduce themselves and then go straight on to their presentation?
Chair, thank you for inviting us. I'm Mr. Frikkie Venter. I'm the Managing Director of the company now called G4S Care and Justice Services. Before that, it was called GSL. Next to me is Mr. Vusi Nangwenya, which is our Finance Director. I thought of starting this presentation. I know that some of you have visited the facility already. Some of you haven't. So before I start with a formal presentation, I'll keep to the time limit, Chair. I thought of, if it works, let's look at a quick snapshot video of what's happening at the prison. And perhaps that will give people an idea of what we're busy with. I hope this works. You will see inmates moving around, walking on the walkways, sports. That is the security fence, staff coming on duty. That's areas which we call campuses, industrial workshops and skill sections. We've got a fully fledged hospital on site, dentists visiting twice a week. Various skill courses that inmates are involved in. That was a shoe factory that we've closed a few months ago. Tailoring, that's a school-based project which I will allude to. Gardening, those gardens have basically produced more than 70 tons for soup kitchens and age houses in the community. That's what we call a star cell. That's what correctional service will call a section. That's the open area within each living unit where inmates can get together and eat. That's the single cell division. That's one of the truck docks. That's one of the cells. Various activities that fit into a 12-hour program per day, kitchen activities, the bakery, we have an on-site bakery, taking inmates on escort to local hospitals or courts, admission processes. That's a multi-purpose consultation room where we do multidisciplinary discussions. There's a social worker discussing group work. That's the school, teaching people how to read and write. A lot of them were illiterate when they got to us. That's some of the skill courses that we present. Library, church. That's a living unit. I think that gives you an idea of what happened at the facility and how we can move over to the presentation. Hey, thanks for bearing with me. The Mangaung Correctional Center is in Bloemfontein, as you guys know. I don't know if the committee has been fully briefed, Chair, on PPPs and how that operates. So if you allow me just three slides, I think that's more in-depth necessary. The first one on your left-hand side is basically the outsourcing, and that's where you basically outsource a specific business. Then PPPs, as you know, it's finance, design, build, and operate and maintaining facilities for government. It's typically what we are doing in Bloemfontein. And it's privatization is something totally different. If we go in what's basically a PPP, you will see that in that specific slide, it gives you a 0 to 3, and that's for construction development. As you can see, that there's a specific budget that government sets for themselves, if they build themselves, and that's the orange bit. Then on top of that is the overruns. Now, to give you an idea of overruns, when the new design prisons was first presented to the portfolio committee, I think a building cost of 250 or 350 million was mentioned to this committee. I think the newspapers last reported that it's currently running on over 800. So what I'm saying is that difference between 350 or 250 and 800, that's the overrun that we are talking about in this specific model, which is the government model. Then there's some delay cost. In other words, it has to be opened at a specific time. And again, if we think at Kimberley, that's running slightly late, so there's cost. And then there's the operating cost plus your overruns in terms of that budget. If you compare that to typically how a PPP works, during the construction period, government doesn't pay a cent for that. That's paid by the private sector, and then in this model between year 2 and 15, it becomes part of that fixed fee, so then government is paying that back. In terms of that operational period, there's also the variant fee, and that's the fee that you pay for operations. Now, again, I know that you have asked government what is the fee for these two prisons, and specifically ours was below 200 rand. And if you look at the information that was presented to you guys a while ago by the provincial commissioner, if you look at the average cost from that document, I've traced it on the internet, then you will see that government is basically at, I think, 182 rand per inmate per day. So it's very close to the 200. But we will now get to where the difference in service delivery lies. That, Joe has dealt with the previous slide where he just gives you the structure. So that's the prison, the correctional center. You will see that the thing looking like crosses is where the housing blocks of inmates, and those block in the middle of that, and as well as the front, is basically where your skills development takes place. Mangaung Correctional Center is situated outside Bloemfontein, and we only have male sentenced inmates in the maximum category, close to 3,000 of those. So we have no women, and we have no babies with women in our facility. I know that that's usually a question that arises out of these presentations. It's a 25-year contract, and it's managed in terms of the defined contractual outcomes that I will deal with. And if you look at what I'm going to tell you, and you look at the white paper, you will have seen that the people writing this contract already had the white paper in mind. So a lot of things that you will see in the new Correctional Services Act, the things that has now been regulated in terms of sentence plans and assessments, everything is already within these private prisons. So if we look at the history, the minister announced in 1999 that we were awarded, and then we were called the Ikwezi. We negotiated with government into the next year, and we opened on the 1st of July 2001. Just a quick snapshot of what the offended group looked like. You will see that rape above 1,200, robberies quite high, and then murder. So if you look at the profile, we will see that above 90 to 96% of these people in this facility is real maximums. With other words, more in the violent crime type of business. That brings us to one of the challenges that they talked about, reclassification, but I will not talk on that today. In terms of sentence length, you will see that about 90% of inmates have sentences ranging from 10 years and up. So we have a big group that's life, that's 20-year life, the previous one. There's 20 years and longer, there's a big group. and then 10 to 15 years. So we are sitting with a 90% population of violent people, and then we just have to look at age distribution to really know what type of mix we have to deal with. And again, you will see that most of our people lie in that block 25 to 35 now. That has been escalated a while ago. So we are sitting with, again, a young population with lots of energy in the maximum violent category with long sentences. So it's a perfect mix to have a lot of management behind those risk people. If we look at services rendered, we are like any other DCS facility. We also fall under the Act. We, on above that, we have contractual outcomes. Now, contractual outcomes means that government is paying us to deliver a specific service. That service is usually something that you have to keep. Say, for instance, 90% of your inmates have to be in activity. So when you visit, you will not find people lying in cells. They are somewhere in a classroom, somewhere with a social worker, and I have to prove each and every day that every guy has a 40-hour activity week every week. That's a normal workday. So they are busy. They don't lie around. And that's why we approach government. If there's somebody with us that government pays us for to keep in classes, and we see that he doesn't go to it, like these that have now burned cells, which I will allude to later, we can't put them in general population, but government pays us to give them classes. Then we give that list to government and say, this is not value for money for you guys. He can lie in a single cell and not go to classes, or please take him somewhere where he perhaps cops that, and give me something, somebody that I can put in a class. You're not spending your money wisely, and that process is in place. So just to touch on some of the contracts, we have 563 staff working for us. About 481 is my staff, G4S staff, and the others are subcontractors like the healthcare, like people doing the feeding. 29% of our staff is female, and that is in an adult male, quite a, as I said, a maximum environment. And we found that the women are doing exceptionally well in such an environment, which people, usually they went against me when I said, let's employ women. We have 3 disabled people working for us, and we are already following the 7 workday establishment since we opened. So we didn't have this switch that we have to do, and we assisted and advised some people in government on how to do the switch to get to 7-day establishment when they start. I'll quickly look at some issues in terms of safe custody, the environment, community involvement, but that's just the agenda. So if we go to safe custody at admissions, we do a thorough assessment. We have an intelligence system running to give us intelligence of if there going to be an incident, which gang members do we have, which ranking of gang members we have. We have a searching program and incident management. We basically, in our approach, we have a special trained group of employees which we call the emergency support team. And when somebody is in danger, they respond. Typically, in terms of research, you will find that if there is safe instance in the old terms, the officer or correctional officer working in a section, the inmate misbehaves. That officer then manhandles or bring that inmate under control. There is a love-hate relationship. He comes back to that street and he has to show that he's stronger than that officer. That's why we use a separate team. It's universally accepted that that's one of the biggest group. In terms of incidents and command arrangement, we have that in place, and I think that these incidents have shown how effective that is. We have a health and safety program. We have drug control measures in place, and that's why I can safely say that in the last 9 years we have regular searching programs, but I think that we found DAFA 6 or 7 times in the 7 years. We use our effective to stop it at the gate. It rarely gets in. And for that we use intelligence systems and sniffer dogs. In terms of the inmates, when they come in, there's an assessment system. It's a computerized system that gives us their strong points, their weak points. Where do we have to focus on this individual to put him back in the community as a productive citizen? Then there's a program that he has to follow, and each inmate, each and every individual, like in the new Act that's now coming into play, already have a sentence plan, and we have a process to ensure that they follow that sentence plan. They also have to sign a compact agreement that they will follow it, and that's linked to the privilege system. Visits, we are doing a 48-hour pre-booking system, and I think this is one of the things that I would regard as a best practice. So it's not like, say, for instance, a correctional facility on a Saturday morning, 5,000 visitors pops up and they perhaps get 10 minutes. They pre-book with us. If the guy is in the school that afternoon, we will tell them, mother, you can't see him in the afternoon, he's busy writing exams. Can you perhaps do the morning or the day afterwards, after that? So we fit, the development plan comes first, and then after that we assist in terms of family contact. We have visits 7 days a week. And when there's children that goes with mother to visit his father, we have special area where we basically keep those inmates, that children busy. We found that children basically sit on dad's lap for the first 5 minutes and then they're bored. And then they basically upset the quality of that visit. So then the children can go and play in the play area. Interestingly enough, we also found that in our searching strategy that the best place for people to bring in data in the facility is in the nappy of a child. And therefore we have specific measures for that, because the child goes directly to dad's lap, he has time to take it out. Wheelchairs as well is a place where if somebody comes in with a wheelchair, most probably data in the parts of the wheelchair. Family contact, as I say, they can receive mail within 24 hours after we have received it. We pay for one letter per week. And they have unlimited calls at his own cost. Clothing is blue, and we basically provide that. Food services are out contracted. 3 nutritional meals are provided on a daily basis. The contract allows us to have 1 hot meal in a day, but we are providing 2. And of course, your special diets and supplements for HIV is also available. Healthcare is available 24 hours a day. We have a fully equipped chemist, x-ray, and doctor's consultation rooms. We provide healthcare, primary healthcare to the units, and we have specific programs in place for mentally ill, chronic illness, and those with suicide and self-harm risks. Just to give you an indication, because I know that last time I was here, you were very interested in this. If you look at the average inmate, sees a doctor twice a year. That's the average, if you look back. They see the nurse 66 times a year, and they see a specialist or a dentist 1.4 times a year. Now, if you think of how regularly your family is visiting the healthcare clinic, and you see this, you can make a quite a reduction on where we stand exactly. In terms of the inmates, first of all, we have a 12-hour program for inmates. We have an assessment, and that basically says that in the next, this day of 12 hours, you are going to wake up at this point in time. We expect you to have your bed made and showered at a specific time, and then it's time for school. Then they go to school. Then they go to industries. They go to social work, and that is registered. And we are doing that on a split shift system. You can't keep 3,000 people busy if you don't have a split system. So what we say is, in the morning you go to school, in the afternoon you go to social work, and then the people in social work go to school in the morning. So we are rotating this. And that's how we are able to keep about 2,800 inmates busy in a day, because we have the system, and it's worked out beforehand. There's a structure. Inmates know what's going to happen. They know where they will be, and then the system runs like a clock. So basically we unlock at 7:30 and we close at 7:30 again in the evening. We are doing various programs. I'm not going to go into detail, but we are doing the normal work like industries. We are doing education, vocation, physical education, counseling, domestic activities, lifestyle options. In terms of inmate care and empowerment, that's the program and the rehabilitation bit. We are doing it in a caring and empowering environment, and the inmates are taking accountability and responsibility for their own programs. We deliver it, but they have to get there. In terms of education, we are doing mother tongue. That's usually for the ones that can't read and write. That's where we start. Then we put them on the AVID levels, grade 11, grade 12, and then tertiary studies, they have to pay for themselves. Our grade 12 result is above 90% for the last 4 or 5 years. And in terms of the Abbott levels, we have won numerous prizes on national level for the best institution in terms of Abbott, as well as the best group of educators. In terms of the more vocational skills, we are giving basic computer and business skills. You've seen that on the video. Office machine operator, that's making copies and how to service a copy machine and those type of things. Candle making, garments. Home care is an interesting one. That's where we teach inmates how to deal with terminally ill patients. When they are released, that's what most of them will find in the community. And we basically give them the hospice type of training to cater for that. And we have found that on their release, hospice usually employs them. Horticulture is the gardens, upholstery, cleaning services, a whole host of programs that we are giving. In terms of the assessment, everybody is assessed within the first 2 weeks, and there we, after that, we are giving them a sentence plan. We track that on a 6-monthly basis. They have a 40-hour activity week for each offender, so there's no time to just lie in your cell. They are busy. We have a structured day program, and as I said, 91 matric pass rate. And then in the last few years, we have issued 4,600 certificates. And that's not us giving it to them. It's Montiel, it's a private education company outside that certifies them that they have this course. If I give them a course, G4S, Mankhoom Correctional Center, they will not find the work outside. So we got external accreditation for that courses, and they are issuing that so that they can go forward. So basically, theoretically, everybody in that facility had the opportunity, but some of them are doing a course and then a basic and then advanced, so some of them haven't. When we started off, more than 60% of people were illiterate. We are way below 40 at this because we focused that on that group that was illiterate. And we have done a 92% increase in terms of that. Social workers, I've got 10 social workers and 15 what we call program DSOs, which is basically the same concept as a social auxiliary worker, and they are giving programs to the inmates. We have 4 psychologists on site, and of course activity officers that keeps them healthy, get them active into sports, and we are engaging about 900 of them per day in terms of these activities. We also have a fully fledged library. We issue about 3,600 books per month from that, and there is a roster that they have to go. You have to remember, this thing works like a train station. If one group goes into a library, another group has to go somewhere else. And if they come out of that group, it's library again. So it has to rotate to get to the contractual outcomes, else we get penalties. Industries, that gives them workplace ethics and workplace discipline. We had industry now that have been making traffic signs for the Free State province. We have a bakery, so we have a clothing factory. So there's a lot of those things that goes on in terms of those skills. Religious care, small groups. We have 31 different churches and faith involved, and 53 external religious workers that come and assist us with prayer meetings, big groups, type of religious care, and that runs for 6 days a week. In general, we have to give the government, Department of Correctional Service, have a strategic plan. We have to give them our strategic plan, and that has to interface with government. So it's not as if we can do our own thing and they do their own thing. It's a partnership, and therefore it's combined. We are also already in line with the white paper, and we report on that annually. Correctional Services Controller on site, he's the guy that's doing the checking up, have unrestricted access to the center, and all our employees have to be trained, and then DCAs have to approve them. So our officers go through not the same training. In my view, it's a bit more detail than Correctional Services, but they certify us, and then after that, we give a 40-hour at least continuation training per year to our staff. Now, that was a good photo when I took it. This is a school in Mankhoom, in the community. At least this school has changed. Usually what we find is people lying on the floor writing, pupils, or we find what we have here where a person will sit on a chair and write on a different chair, or some of them sit on the floor, write on a chair. And what we have done is we have basically gone and we have taken all these blue pipes that you see on the photo that's written off in the province, goes to one point. We collect it there. We take that to the prison. We use the inmate labor to basically revamp that desk like this, and then we go and give it to schools that doesn't have desks. So that's a community outreach program. We have done 1,015 desks so far. And fortunately for us, one of our partners, Old Mutual, also came to the party, and they are financing part of this deal. So currently, I think that we are school number 11 at this point in time. We target schools that very poor, schools with no desks, and there was one school now that has a brand new structure. I think it's this one. But they didn't have money in the budget to buy chairs. So we partnered then with the Department of Education and our community trust to identify schools and then we do the outreach. So in terms of our outreach, and again I have to say this is not a contractual outcome. So this is not what you guys are paying us to do. But we know that the inmates have to go back to the community. And the community is not going to accept these people if they don't start paying back. So what we've done is the school days are 1,015. 75 tons of the vegetables grows at the prison is going to shelters, children's homes and centers for people with disabilities and old people. We have revamped three victim support rooms at local police station as part of the 16 days of activism process at the end of the year. And we are looking forward to another one at the end of this year. We are involved in candles, to make candles for cancer. We are involved in the Life Solutions program. That's a program that runs in the community for children that is in conflict with the law. And we have regular community in Davos talking to the community of what we can do for them, what they can do for us, and that type of stuff. This is just a slide that shows two things. On the left-hand side, you will see the NOSA. That's the International NOSA Award. That's the Occupational Health and Safety Award that's issued. It's the same as the British five stars. We have won the NOSA for the international one in our category, and we are the only prison in Africa that have a five-star rating in terms of health, safety, that type of stuff. On the right-hand side is the Premier's Award, the Excellence Award. The Premier of the Free State have decided to award companies that are doing a lot for community outreach. We are on the same category as Sasol. That's somebody that we compete with. And for the last 2 years, we have won the Gold Award in that category in terms of doing things to increase life in local communities around us. On the left-hand side, previous president and previous minister of education giving that award to our teachers. That was the principal. And that year we won national for the best Abbott Center as well as the best group of educators. And we compete even with colleges in that specific competition. The bottom one is the ethics. We are now accredited. I think we are the only president accredited. With the South African Institute of Ethics, because we believe that ethics is important in our business. We don't do the things that one reads about in the newspapers, and therefore we had to stand up as business and say we are ethical, so that if we are not, people can hit us. So that's the only way to set the example. And that's the Ethics Institute of South Africa's logo. So our achievements, NOSA Health and Safety Award, we've got five stars this year. Premier's Award, I said that we've won 2007-2008. This year's competition hasn't been launched. Best Abbott Center in Free State for 2007-2008 and 2009. And national, we won that competition this year as well. The Facility Management Project of the Year, that's for the maintenance of the government building. We got that audited and we won that award. We have the best risk manager of the year, according to NOSA. He won that competition on a national level, and then as well as international NOSA awards. What people say about us, unfortunately, a lot of you haven't visited me for some while, but the British Commissioner of Correctional Services visited us a few years, 4 or 5 years ago, and he said, I found that they're absolutely fascinated and left entirely convinced about the feasibility of running a prison of this size in the UK. I've seen very few prisons anywhere in the world that I would consider better than yours. What's interesting is when we started off that institution, I had to send all my management to the UK to go and learn on how to run a prison within human rights culture. Currently, we get the UK coming to us to see how do you run a big prison. So that tables have changed. Mr. Balfour, I have said that we are basically the white paper in action when he visited it. The challenges. The change in the parole policy was a challenge for us. DCS made a change to their policies in the sense that inmates had to consider it earlier. And we had to basically try to adapt to that. That's done. The ARV policy, that's still something that Joe has also flagged as a concern. We have regular meetings with DCS, and that's on the agenda again for this month, at the end of this month. So I think that one will be addressed. Drug-resistant TB, the XDR TB, that's something that came out of the blue. I think that we were the first prison to basically get those blue lights in to protect staff, because you can't take the XDR patients to other hospitals who are going to do the security there. Gang phenomenon, that's something that needs constant engagement, but we have a gang strategy in place and the incidents have come down. And then other challenge that we have is the communication with the customer. Now, on that one, it's also on the agenda for the end of this year, this month. It's one of those things where, because we have a contract, we have to constantly ensure that each party is keeping to that contract. So say, for instance, DCS will have a change in legislation. They are going to feed inmate safety 10 times a day. I have to flag that and say, but I didn't price for it. What about us? And with Joe's assistance, we have communication lines up and running. Sometimes it's a challenge, and most of the times it works fine, but the regular meetings really assist us greatly. One of the things that we didn't get off the ground as we would have is that this Professor Tapscott came and he basically identified that best practices in correctional services, and 53 of those 84 practices was identified in the private center. And one of the outcomes of PPP initially was to get best practices and then share it between the partners. And we find that we can do that still better. So that's something that we will focus on. And specifically with them opening Kimberley, we think that perhaps we can work closer together and really assist them in creating a great facility in Kimberley. Eskom is a problem for every one of us that have a house, not only for a prison, but the impact on this is about 1.8 million rand, this increase that they have now announced. And that's clearly something that you didn't foresee when you bid a prison for 25-year price, and now you have to pay. So that's a challenge and something that we have to live with. And then, of course, to retain staff. We find that because our staff is well known to be well trained, some government institutions, not DCS, I must say, but other government institutions basically go for our staff in terms of data, which is great for the individuals. And that's my story, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any addition? Happiness. Thanks. If we then could move on to the next presentation, and in a similar fashion, if you could introduce your team and then just get down to business. You've got 30 minutes.
Chairperson. Members of the Portfolio Committee, it is my colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege to address you this morning. Joining me today in today's presentation to my right is Mr. Dennis McCarthy, and to his right is Mr. Kelly Stark Dow, and we are representatives of South African Custodial Services. South African Custodial Services was awarded the contract to design, build, finance, operate, and maintain the 3,024-bed facility at called the Katama Sintomule Correctional Center in Makado, situated in the Limpopo province, approximately Johannesburg. The correctional center is so named in honor of the two local tribal chiefs of the area. The land on which the correctional center is built was donated by the municipality to the Department of Public Works. The contract awarded to South African Custodial Services for the design, build, finance, operate, and maintenance of the Kutamas and Tumuli Correctional Center follows a campus-style design. As this particular slide shows, the housing areas are divided into three areas, and each housing area has three housing blocks attached to it. Each housing block accommodates approximately 400 inmates per housing block. The campus-style design allows for a centralization of the primary services that are required to be delivered in the correctional center. Those primary services include maintenance, health care, the kitchen, medical care, admissions, and induction. Each of the housing areas then individually have their own laundrette, program and teaching areas, computer laboratories, and libraries, which the inmates of those specific housing areas are able to access and make use of. The contracting structure of South African Custodial Services is made up as shown on the slide before. South African Custodial Services is jointly owned by Kansani Corrections, a 100% black-owned South African company with a level 1 empowerment rating, and the GEO Group, a New York Stock Exchange-listed company with and a global leader in privately operated correctional centers. Upon award of the contract, South African Custodial Services then procured funding from a consortium of South African banks. In order to deliver the service obligations required of South African Custodial Services, three subcontracts were concluded with South African Custodial Management, Kansani Corrections Management, and Royal Food Services. It's important to note that Kansani Corrections Management, which is the company that delivers the maintenance, rehabilitation, training programs, and facilities maintenance as well as procurement, is a 100% black-owned company. Almost 60% of the entire services that are performed in the Kusama Sintamuli Correctional Center are performed by black enterprises. 97% of all staff employed at the facility are previously disadvantaged individuals from the local area, and there's a total of 540 staff employed at the facility. 24% of all staff are black female. A vast majority of the staff who are currently employed were previously unemployed from the local area. And what we have also noticed and seen coming to effect is that the multiplier effect of focusing on black people and black enterprises has had a significant effect against the background of high rates of poverty in the Makado area. South African Custodial Services views the contract with the government of South Africa as a genuine partnership, and works constantly with the Department of Correctional Services in enhancing and improving service delivery in the correctional services sector. It is important to note that the correctional center opened in 18 months from the conclusion of contractual negotiations. The correctional center has operated at full capacity since August of 2002, and there has not been a single cost variation from the original project, either during the construction phase or during the operational phase to date.
We looked at the operation of the correctional center from a supply chain perspective when we were invited to enter into a logistics achiever award, for which we won a platinum prize along with Sasol. Where we look at the inputs to our correctional center from the justice system, and the two key elements of maintaining a safe and secure environment and the rehabilitation processes that occur on a daily basis. That is supported by a number of other activities, including health, food services, laundry services, finance administration and quality management processes, all with the aim of producing individuals who behave according to society's values and norms at the end of the correctional process.
The rehabilitation process at the correctional center starts with a comprehensive risk and profile assessment of an offender during the admission and induction phase. This allows for the formation of a sentence plan which is dynamic in nature and determines the degree and nature of exposure to education and development programs. The development programs that are offered at the Kutama Sintamuli Correctional Center include social work programs, psychological programs, educational programs. Education is provided up to a matric level, and assistance is provided to all students who wish to further their studies at a tertiary level. Pastoral and religious programs, as well as vocational training in woodwork, metalwork, building, horticulture, motor mechanics, and textiles. And we find that this is also a great avenue in which offenders are able to improve their skills, particularly in an environment where they very often have to self-employ themselves. These are extremely useful skills when they do leave the facility. The next slide presents a typical structured day program and is a snapshot of the life of an offender during the day. Offenders are encouraged to participate in work activities and programs, and we find that this tends to enhance the rehabilitation process as there is a sense of ownership in all the activities that they eventually take on. Facility maintenance. 85% of maintenance is on time on pre-planned activities. There are, on average per annum, 10,400 planned inspections and services, and 1,600 unplanned work orders that are need to be conducted. The challenge that we have faced in terms of facility maintenance and the upkeep of utilities at the facility has related primarily to the supply of water. The Makati municipality experiences a volatile water supply system, and this has made the management of the correctional center difficult. In light of the duty of care and responsibility that we as South African Custodial Services have to the offenders that we accommodate, we took the decision to install an emergency water supply system at our own cost, and this has virtually eliminated water supply and water shortage problems at the facility.
The purpose of security is to make sure we maintain a safe and secure environment, and with the constant activity of the facility, it is sometimes easy to forget that at the end of the day, a correctional centre is a hostile and high-risk environment. We have numerous security processes, the aim of which is to integrate both the static and dynamic security elements into a single seamless security system that ensures that we can deliver the programmes on a daily basis and to ensure the safety of all staff, visitors, and offenders.
The next slide shows the population of the correctional center by age group, and we find it quite a fascinating slide. The slide shows the age categorization of all offenders at the correctional center. Two-thirds of the offenders are between the ages of 21 and 35. And we find this dealing with this age group quite beneficial in the sense that there is generally a very high uptake in the participation in programs, both vocational and educational, and an increasing sense of awareness and ownership in terms of wanting to control their own destiny. The slide on general offender information, the longest sentence that we have is 27 life sentences plus 1,127 years in prison. The shortest sentence is 12 years. The oldest offender is 88 years old, who's just started serving a 15-year sentence. And the youngest offender is 23 years old. We have a variety of official visits from lawyers, social workers, the police services, and the inspecting judge's office as well. Social visits during the first 6 months of 2009, 3,562 offenders received social visits from 5,488 adult visitors and 638 children. We find that the social visits are a key element in offender rehabilitation, as prisoners look forward to this, and any misbehavior on their part could easily warrant that they are not able to participate during a visitation.
The objectives for the health services is to provide effective primary health care services to the prison population through a centralized hospital and through decentralized clinics available in each of the living areas. The health services help us reduce risk in terms of moving offenders outside. It also reduces the load on the public health system. The HIV program, which we engaged in with the department, has seen our death in custody due to natural causes has dropped by 66% from an average of about 30 per annum to just over 10 per annum. We have regular interactions with the Department of Health to ensure we comply with all the relevant standards, health standards, all the required certifications, and when we find our interaction with the Department of Health very effective. If you want to upset an inmate, the easiest way is to go to food services. Again, it's a key focus of delivering the services on a daily basis. The food services are delivered through a centralized kitchen with decentralized delivery of the food with the use of isolated hot trolleys actually built by offenders. The offenders test drove the first trolleys that we installed and found them wanting, and we looked at the new design which the offenders then helped us build. If there is a focus on quality, we keep samples of food for 4 days to test in the event of any incident. In addition to the normal vocational programs, we have extensive formal training of the offenders who provide food services. Again, it's a key opportunity for offenders to get released to find employment in the catering and tourism industry.
In terms of community involvement and community interaction, there are a variety of activities that are undertaken by the facility in order to extend and expand its relationship with the community. And this is a non-contractual strategy to allow a comprehensive interaction with the community. And part of that also includes visitors' days that we normally have for each of the housing areas. Again, these are over and above the normal visitation rights that prisoners have. What the facility does is it organizes an entire day event where there's a bride that's catered for, there's a jumping castle as you'll see in the prison and the portal, and the prisoner and his family have the opportunity to interact on a level far beyond just sitting across the table and having a conversation. And we find this works very, very beneficially in terms of the ability for the prisoner to start making sense of the deed that is committed and in terms of his rehabilitation. In fact, just recently, the MEC for Sports and Culture in the Limpopo province visited the facility with regards to the launch of a 2010 FIFA initiative, and she gave a very glowing report of the activities that are currently ongoing at the Correctional Center.
In terms of the operating results, there was a fast-track delivery of services. The contractor went from signing the contract to full capacity in less than 2 years, which was an 18-month construction period, and then 4 to 5 months of taking inmates from DCS up to a maximum capacity inside 2 years. As mentioned earlier by my colleague, there has not been a single cost variation to government on the contract apart from the standard CPI adjustments. Cost comparisons are always difficult to make sure you're comparing apples with apples. We are more than willing to cooperate and engage on any joint benchmarking exercises in terms of the cost of delivery of our services. The operation started up on time, it was on budget. We've had many, many independent audits. Our colleagues from DCS mentioned the extensive monitoring processes that are in place and the extensive audits that are conducted. We achieved the Logistics Achiever Award. We have exceeded the empowerment obligations by a wide margin. We have practiced unit management and direct supervision, and the 7-day establishment was started from the opening of the facility. We have a very positive interaction with the support base of offenders, including their families and other contacts, and we believe we effectively manage and maintain one of the new generation correctional centers.
In terms of the empowerment that has been taken on by South African Custodial Services, in the 7 years of operation, the total procurement obligation was 211 million rand, and the actual procurement from Black Enterprise has been 293.8 million rand. And this is a 39% increase in the overall obligation that is required. The ownership of the contracting entity, the minimum obligation was 40%. South African Custodial Services achieved a 50% BE ownership. Staff development, PDE middle managers within 5 years, we've achieved 91%. And 78% of supervisory and management positions are sold from internal sources, effectively meaning that we have utilized the skills that were brought into the facility and trained by us and moved those people through the ranks in terms of filling the supervisory and management positions. Trading hours, our obligation is 152,000 hours per annum, and our actual achieved is 170,000 hours per annum. Our targeted labor obligation is 94 million rand to date, and our actual achievement is 348.6 million rand. There are a number of bursaries that are granted by the institution to allow staff to expand their education and extend their educational achievements. We have international advisors who participate in the management of the facility. And there was, I think most importantly, there was a two-year strategic support service agreement with the BE partners, and that lapsed in 2004. And now the Palestinian BE partners are self-sufficient, and the entire correctional center is run by local people.
In terms of the challenges we face, first of all, it's to maintain the contractual compliance records. The contractual obligations are extensive. They detail, in many areas, the exact services that government require from us. It's not easy to deliver those services, and we have 550 staff every single day dedicated to make sure we continue to deliver the services that we've contracted to provide. Another challenge is CPI and CPIX volatility. We moved from 12% at the end of last year down to below 7% now. We have had periods during the contract where CPI dropped rapidly from 15% to almost zero. That is a challenge. The ESCOM price increase is also mentioned in terms of what's happening in terms of cost escalation, all of which is for the contractor's risk. The outcome of OSD and public service salary adjustments presenting a challenge to us. Again, we only have CPI adjustments to our contract price. Not many employees in South Africa will be happy with only CPI-related increases for the last 7 years. So escalation of labour costs and expectations in relation to OSD is a challenge. Union demands and industrial relations is a continuous challenge. Sustainability of utilities, water and electricity, both in terms of the continuity of supply. We have installed emergency water supply procedures to enable us to deal with water shortages in the area. The management and treatment of MDR and XMDR-TB. And the HIV-AIDS population requires constant management. Another challenge is ARV medication costs, which we're in consultation with the Department of Health in terms of the company's commitment to engaging with the department in terms of delivering on the HIV-AIDS strategy. In terms of the ARV treatment for age group, again, we find that the majority of those HIV-positive are below the age of 35. So again, it's a focus on the younger elements of the prison population.
I would like to take the opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for allowing us to present the operational report of the Somerset Correctional Center. The presentation has contained a lot of information which had to be presented in a relatively short space of time. We believe that a fuller, more comprehensive experience will be achieved by a visit to the Correctional Center. Therefore, we extend an open invitation to the Portfolio Committee to visit the Correctional Center at your convenience. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any more contributions? Happiness. Thank you very much. Tea was scheduled for 10:45. We're trying to organize it. We have the tea break now, come back and then have robust engagement for the remainder of the time. So as soon as I get an indication that tea is ready, we will break for tea. But in the meantime, if there are members of parliament that would want to pose questions, please indicate and we will identify you and we'll take it from there. Mr. Ainsley, Mr. Sell, some of you might not know ma'am. Again, and then, this started there. What number is it? Mr. Ainsley, you'll be one. Mr. Shelf will be two. Wangena, you'll be three. Nyanda, you'll be four. Fritz, you'll be five. Fitz, six. Let's make
I'll go second, and you will close the first number for us, Bob. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. I think we must thank the presenters for very detailed and very informative presentation. Very useful to get a background understanding of these two important, very important facilities and the whole process of Triple P. But here I've got two very short questions. One is quite a general question. The other is more scopus-specific. Now, my scopus-specific, I would imagine, would have to be answered by the department. Are they able to do that?
They're not in trouble because we specifically said that the department must be able to answer any question that we ask related to PPP. So please feel free to ask any question. As long as it's PPP related, we'd expect between the invitees that somebody will be able to answer our questions.
Okay. The general question is that things appear to be going very well at both prisons. But in the case of Ma Hung prison, the one in Bloemfontein, there seems to be sporadic outbreaks of protests and violence. We had the minister having to intervene a few months ago in a strike at that prison. Then I believe 2 weeks ago there was another very serious incident involving prisoners who attempted to set the school alight and broke furniture. And there was no reference when you were discussing the challenges at that particular prison. There wasn't very much reference. Well, what is the cause? Why is this happening? In particular, the incident 2 weeks ago. The incident regarding the strike, there's a fair amount of information on that. The ministers have intervened and statements made on that event. But the one 2 weeks ago is quite puzzling. What gave rise to that particular incident? That's the general question. Should I stop there? Then the scope is specific. There are two resolutions from SCOPA which have not yet have been met, have not yet been carried through. The one regards a resolution, a request from SCOPA that a cost benefit analysis be done on these two prisons. And in the presentation, we were told that the main rationale for these private prisons is to improve on cost effectiveness and make sure we get value for money. Now, the scope of resolution requested a cost benefit analysis to be made. In the light of confusion, and even some confusion today, at what is the cost to the state, to the taxpayers, of these two facilities? A scope of calculation in 2007 was done that indicated that in a normal prison, the average cost per prisoner was about 123 rand per day. In these facilities, the average cost rose to 270 rand. A business day later indicated that, in fact, the cost may be four times higher. So that is why Scopa felt it was very, very important to do a cost-benefit analysis. That has not been done, to the best of my knowledge. If I understand the most recent Auditor General's report, most recent annual report of the department, you had a task group looking into these kinds of matters, but no cost-benefit analysis was done. I can't understand why that hasn't been done yet. Chairman, finally, the second one is also part of the Scopa resolution. We were very concerned, the last Scopa committee was very concerned, that a number of senior officials in the department contracted with the companies that have presented here today, contracted with these companies, then left the department and then became directors of these very companies that were running these prisons. And we asked for a list, Scopa asked for a list of directors who were formerly members of the Correctional Services Department who are now directors of these prisons, or directors, sorry, of the companies running these prisons. To the best of my knowledge, also we have not received that list. I believe this is called javelin throwing, isn't it? Javelin throwing, I think is the expression used. You're in a particular position, you prepare contracts for private enterprise. Once those things are ready to be concluded, you then leave your position with the civil servant and you go work for private practice. I just call Jablin, sorry. So if you want to know, please to give us a list of the directors involved in that way. Thank you.
Mr. South, but just before you continue, Mr. South, just so that there's uniformity, our guests from SCOPA, our practice is that we limit each member to 3 questions per round. If you have follow-up questions later on, you'll certainly be allowed, just so that we don't hog it and everybody has fair opportunity to raise his points. Mr. South.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure that the costs per inmate are high in private prisons, largely because of the contractual amount of inmates that the private prison can take. But, I mean, what we saw here is evidence of, if you like, a Rolls-Royce operation. I mean, the quality of services offered at the PPP prison are far higher than just about any other government-operated prison that I've ever been to. And that, as I think Mr. Fenter said, it was useful in establishing best practice throughout the department. But what worries me, and it's worried this committee for a very long time, and it's really a question that I'd like to put to the department rather than to the contractors, is that why are the inmates that are sent to the two PPP prisons serving absurdly long sentences so as not really to be able to benefit in any meaningful way from the very high quality of rehabilitative services that are offered at those facilities? I mean, I understand if he's not been moved out, that Mr. charmingly known as Doggy Dog Raiders was at Mangaung for a while. He might still be there. You know, at the other prison, they've got somebody serving 27 life sentences plus 1,127 years. Well, that person's never going to be released. So why are we rehabilitating the person? Why are we giving the services to that person? Now, I mean, it's not your problem. It's not the contractor's problem. The contractor takes who they get. But my worry is that the department said, here we've got a problem here. Here we've got a doggy dog racist, and we've got a thoroughly unpleasant sociopath gang leader. Let's put him in the private prisons. Get him out of the system. And so what you're sitting with there in those high-quality Rolls-Royce facilities is people who can't derive any benefit from them. And the question that I ask to the department is, why aren't we using these facilities for medium offenders or for young offenders or for people who can really get the maximum degree of benefit from the services that, as Roy Ainsley said, are quite probably more expensive? But if we're going to make an investment at that differential cost, then let's make that investment in people that we can get a return from. And what I can never understand, despite us raising this question year after year after year, is why inmates serving 27 life sentences plus 1,127 years land up in a private prison. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Mine is just a comment. Maybe they said it, and I didn't hear both of them saying it. I even went through the papers here to see if maybe they've put it down, and it's not there. The issue of how many blacks are there, how many whites are there, how many Indians are there, and how many colors are there in prison. Because what I'm looking at is that maybe, especially with the one at Makado, maybe it's because it's in Limpopo, maybe only black people are the ones who are really offenders and they're the ones who are going to jail. So could they just please tell us if maybe they are white Indians then? Colors. Thank you.
I'm hoping that members have remembered their numbers. I think we get to number 5. Or is it you next? Is it number 4 now? No, not you, sir. We'll come to you later. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. In this slide, it's same effective searching of all employees and visitors and inmates. But I had the presenter saying they happened to find Daha somewhere in the gates. Who brings the Daha? And my second question, who brings the Daha? And are staff members not bringing the Daha inside the prison? My second question, I want to know how many of your staff members are suspended and are suspended with pay or without pay? I will come for the second round, Chairperson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, I want to connect to what Mr. Chair himself spoke about, the best practices. Because I had the opportunity to visit Mankahong. I haven't seen the other president in Limpopo. And I, at that point, was with the minister, I think, from Swaziland of Correctional Services, who refused to be searched, and the officials refused the entry. And it was as simple as that. This is an interesting point because there was no waiving of whoever you are, and therefore you're not searched. Now, I'm asking, there seems to be a whole lot of very best practices within, I don't know about the other one, I'll talk about Mankahong, because I've seen that one personally. I want to almost ask, are you not doing more as a company to actually proactively go to this? Because right next to you is Grootvlei Prison. And if, and I've also gone a lot to Grootvlei. It's the complete opposite of how to run or manage a prison. I just see this as a question I want to ask. Who do you hold accountable for any kind of transgression in your... And I'm not just talking about catching someone. I'm talking about someone responsible for the cause of something operational. You know, I don't know whether you understand what I'm asking. Where a director, because of his negligence, allowed, and I know there's been one escape, I think, in the years there. Who do you hold? The question I want to ask, who do you hold accountable when someone doesn't perform operationally the duties or the thing that he's supposed to perform? The other question I want to ask, is I'm very interested in the two models. I saw the one in Limpopo, and there's a 50-52 big shareholders, 50-50, and I see Mankahong with 20-20-20, 5 times 20%. And it seems as if the other one in Mankahong has a lot of, you know, empowerment kind of components to the biggest shareholding of the company. And this is an interesting thing to just explain the two different models, because it seems as if the one is very, very foreign kind of controlled and investment, I'm just asking. And the other one seems to be much more open opportunity type of investment possibilities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Number five, no. Six. No. Number six. Number six was number five. Number six. All right, let's not have a debate about it. You'll continue, sir, at the back. No, no, I know. You have a chance, Mr. Fischler, of following, we'll take it in that order.
Thank you, Chairman. The toy from Muskoka. I'm just referring to the 39th report of the Standing Committee of Public Accounts, dated 20 June 2007. On the last page, page 6, under the conclusion, it says the committee requests the accounting officer to provide Parliament with a progress report on the above-mentioned issues in the 16 days. My first question is just, and I think maybe they can't answer everything now, but what they can now, it would be appreciated. Was the progress report submitted to Parliament in 60 days? If not, when was it? And if not, why not? And since this report on the 20th of June 2007, were all the recommendations of SCOPA being adhered to? And if not, could we at some time have a list of these recommendations without that's not being adhered to? Thank you.
I'm saying, are you through with your question? Mr. Fischler.
Thank you, Chairman. I think one the question is touched by I think the question of youth. I think we have been harping on this question that the selection of youth to be in these two PTP can be
continue with their life than selecting people who are going to, some of them may die in prison, and saying that they are going to be trained. And the training of a person who has so many lives into that one is one thousand. Now, also, the question of Ken Sullivan, you know, there is one prison here in the Western Cape. That is this is the New Generation Prison. They have a way of dealing with cancers, where they say, for you to enjoy these facilities in the prison, you have to change your habits. Otherwise, we will send you back to where you are coming from. So, in a way, they are trying, they're succeeding in controlling the cancer. Now, you have better facilities than any of these prisons in South Africa. And I come to people who have the challenge in your prison, with all the facilities and with all the skills training that has been done. Because one of the problems in prison is the question of sitting down in prison and doing nothing. And when here in your prison, they've got all the active, they are all active, prisoners are all active. Yeah. So it means that you can care the question of terrorism, especially by separating them. Different kinds of those are the point one. The third one also, question of parole. I didn't get clearly how you deal with the relief and parole, whether I've got a parole board or not, as we have in the very first.
Mr. Abba.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, both these facilities are in rural areas. And I have not heard in the presentations whether I realize that they are private public partnerships, but whether they involve any form of agricultural activity apart from the horticultural aspect, where Mangaung has apparently made available 75 tons of vegetables to neighboring communities. What are you doing to enhance agricultural activity amongst the inmates on the one hand, if you are procuring all your ingredients for food, which are all agriculture-based basically, what percentage thereof are you acquiring from newly settled farmers in these areas in order to give impetus to a broad-based black economic empowerment and support for emergent farmers? Secondly, Chair, you both mention in your challenges that you see utilities, the sustainability of utilities, water and electricity on the one hand, and well, of course, when you talk Eskom, you make me see red, you know. These guys who are now seeking another 40, 50, 60% increase. What sort of impact did the recent increase of 31% have on your sustainability? And if there were to be, which seems to be obvious, another 40 or 50% increase in the next few months or so, what sort of impact would that have on your sustainability? And whether you have thought or looked at alternative forms of generating energy, whether you have investigated that, because increasingly one will have to look at alternative forms, because you cannot be beholden to a single energy supplier. Agriculture is going to be one of those industries in our country that is going to be affected by the cost of energy in the provision of food security. So one will have to look at alternatives, whether you've done so. With regard to water also, if you could tell us what the real difficulties are Is it the fact that the facility is situated in an area where there's a water scarcity or shortage? And what have you done about it? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. As someone who is doing oversight on public tests, I had questions prepared on financial aspect of the whole thing. But Chair, I hope you will give us another second round, I suppose. But if you can allow me to divert, because I thought there are some very serious questions that is disturbing me in my mind. Firstly, I want to build out my question from the question of Babosika about gangsterism in the jail. Do you have such things? Your gangsterism 28, 26, you name them. But again, because for me, this is where the power relation thing comes to play in our facilities. But specifically linked to that, the sexual violent crime amongst the inmates, do you have such things? Do you have people who come to your facilities checked on their status? And do you have people who, by any chance, who will come to your facility being HIV negative and come out there, or during the process of the incarceration being found HIV positive? This is very serious, because the studies that has been conducted anywhere else in other facilities, the fear amongst the number of percentage of your inmates, 21, 35, are saying going to jail today is a death sentence. You go out there being HIV negative, by the time you are released 15 years down the line, you are HIV positive. And that's there. Is actually a serious, is a double punishment. Do you have such things, and can you confirm it? And I'm just going to urge you to be honest on this one. Very, very honest. Do you have such things? If that does not, I will be the happiest man. But lastly, Chair, one more question is that, are you in any risk for inmates to escape in light of the high quality, sophisticated facilities? Do you have any risk of inmates, or has it ever happened? I'm sorry for the ignorant Chair, because I've not been engaging on correctional service due to my prior deployment.
Thank you, sir. For the sake of order, we're going to ask the department to answer all questions that you think were directed to you. We'll then move on to Mangahung, and then we'll move on to Kutuma. So the department, all questions directed to you, if you could respond, and members will remind us if there's any questions that were not responded to, but we try to take notes of questions that were raised. Manta, put your phone off, please. I'll put your phone off.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to respond to the second question that was asked by the first gentleman on the cost-benefit analysis. I'm not so sure whether a detailed analysis was done, but what I can remember was when we did a feasibility study for the four PPP prison. prisons to be built, there was some reference to the cost-benefit analysis, but I'm not so sure whether the instruction from your side, was it in relation to the four, or was it a separate instruction? But all what I can remember is in terms of necessary for the four, there was some reference to the cost because they were also expected to touch on this issue. But I'm not so sure whether this covered your initial instruction to do a detailed cost analysis on this issue. The other issue is on the other question of Mr. Self on why keep offenders who are doing long sentences. I'll try. Unfortunately, Mr. Mutseki is not here to respond to this question, but what I can remember that the last time when we engaged the two contractors, there was also an issue related to this that was raised by Mr. Mutseki. I don't know whether this matter will be pursued, but we did discuss, albeit in passing. We have a meeting with the two contractors again on the 15th. I don't know whether Mr. Mutseki will be able to raise this issue there. I think that is in a nutshell. Mr. Mbuo also want to respond to some of the questions, but I think largely the other questions can be responded to by our two partners.
The first question, which was the first about SCOPA, whether a list of the officials that work for the department was supplied to SCOPA. From the department's point of view, I know because I was involved in the compilation of the list initially, which actually included even officials that were not involved in the negotiations of the contract, because at the beginning that was the question that was asked, whether we have officials that were involved in the negotiations of the contract that have left the department to join the 2PP prison. We did provide all the information, in fact, even including people that were not involved, and those that we are at director positions, but they did not play any role in the negotiations in terms of negotiating the contract. There was that information that we had in the department. Whether that actually was supplied to SCOPA on time, that's what I can go back and find, and then perhaps let the department submit that information. Because I remember it was this question was asked twice by SCOPA when I attended. The other question that was raised was about the long sentences. Long-serving inmates or offenders being sent to Kutamas and Tumule and Mangaung, that are we not depriving ourselves the benefits of actually getting these inmates to be rehabilitated and then be released so that they are beneficial to the community? I think maybe at the beginning of the contract, maybe the department was looking at the risk transfer, because all the types of risk that are there, the contractor is actually, we are paying for it. But as we progressed and questions that had been raised, it also prompted the department to look at it. That's why my colleague was saying that the branch that is responsible for development and care and correction, they are looking at that as well. And they've already started quizzing the 2PPP officials and say,
what if we do this? And they've also responded, as one would have expected, that when you move, I'm making an example now of youth, they mentioned that the profile of a youth is quite different from an adult, especially when you look at the rehabilitation aspect of it. Although they did not go into detail to that, which I hope in our next meeting they will go into detail. Maybe there are risks which they are going to be profiling, whether that will have financial impact at this stage, I'm not sure. But it's something that we have been looking at so that we can look at the research, the level or the sentences of these inmates that are sent there, whether we can send inmates that would actually be qualifying in terms of being released and then being to the community so that all the rehabilitation programs are beneficial. That is something that we'll be discussing in these forums that we have now established. If I can just add on the first one about the issue regarding the cost benefits, I know that in terms of reference of the transaction advisor, we are saying that you will do the feasibility study for the four, but there was also another aspect that was added on it, which was the value for money, which also included in those terms of reference, and there was also in actual fact contact between the two PPP officials during that investigation to find out the value for money, and also in terms of improving the cash flow of the department, and also try and find out if there can be some renegotiation of the contracts. There are reports to that effect, which I think can be made available to the members. I think the other questions are actually operational.
Chairperson, may I make a brief comment on the reply?
No, we will afford you an opportunity, sir, later.
Thank you. In terms of the question, the person that has gone on first, in terms of Mangkhum, what you record for sporadic strikes and incidents of violence, what has happened is that we are receiving inmates from very far afield. If there's a member of or official of correctional services being assaulted in Brandvlei, the next day those inmates are in front of my door. They're not sending them to Kokstad for one or other reason I will not know, but they end with me. So we are sitting with a lot of inmates that basically are far from their families. In the minister, in what you call an intervention, she came and there was two main concerns. The one is we want to be transferred closer to our families, and for that we need to be reclassified. Inmates realize that as long as they are maximum classification, there's not a lot of prisons that they can be sent to. If they are a medium, then they can go to a lot of places. Some of those people, and I only have 28 years of experience in corrections, in my life will not be a medium. But perhaps they may be classified as that, and perhaps that will put communities at risk. And I think they know that, and that's why they are pushing in this type of way. The other question that they have, complaint that they had to the minister, and I'm not dealing with the small things like we want internet access. I don't think that deserves a comment. The other one is that if they are HIV positive, they don't get the right feeding. We've let the Department of Health check that, as well as a private dietitian. They found that the nutritional value of that meal is correct. So the main complaint currently is that we want to be transferred, for that we need to be reclassified. It's exactly the same reason why they, until the 25th of September, has gone on this rampage.
In those 2 days, they have broken, as you have said, a lot of glass, 22,000 rand worth of glass windows in the education block, and that was 9 inmates. It's not a mass incident, it's only 9 inmates. The damage was massive. And in the next day, they have set 21 fires alight. And guess what? They have set 21 cells alight on the next day. And guess what is their reason? We want to be a medium. If inmates, without taking due cognizance of their own life and putting other inmates in danger in life, start fires in cells that inhabit it, they want to be a medium. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Within 3 days after those incidents, the prison was back to normal operation. Visits were taking place and programs were running. So we bounced back from that. The investigation is currently, but to give you an answer, that's the two reasons. In terms of your scope of specific stuff, I can't say much. In terms of the cost-benefit analysis, in my lifetime in front of this committee, there was two. There was one done by Sulant and a private contractor from the PPP unit, and it came back to this committee, and there was a report. There was one slide that they didn't show you because it would have looked as if private sector were more valuable money than it was. So if you get that that presentation, ask for the missing slide. The second one was a while ago when I think it was the one that Mr. Ngubu referred to, that was done by Justice Stolt and his people. Again, that showed to be cost-effective. If we look at the figures, and I only have the presentation that is available to Parliament, if I compare our cost, which is, and I will get to the, I'm only talking about operational cost. If you talk about the operational cost, we are below 200, and the Groot Lake prison next to us is above 200, delivering about half of the service we deliver. So that's a comparison from the documents that's in front of Parliament. We have to be careful, because every time I hear the story about 123 versus 270 rands for private sector, private sector has two fees. The one is the operational fee. That's what pays for day-to-day operations. The other one is paying off the building. So say, for instance, to give you a very simple analysis of it, you buy a house. You pay off that house, and then you still have to feed your children. So the feeding of the children combined with your installment seems to be high. Government have paid upfront for their building, so they don't pay off this house, so they are only looking at feeding the children. So we have to compare variable fees with each other and not paying the building back. And that is what skews the way that people look at it, and that has been a debate that's going on for quite a while. The next thing that I can say, people will most probably say, is controversial. This is about the senior officials that has done this javelin and throwing one. I'm the only one in this room today that is in that category of people that have been in corrections and then have left and joined the private sector. When I was informed that there's this private thing, I was already headhunted, and therefore I was not part of any process within looking at the contracts, writing specification, or evaluating it. Every time this pops up, whether it's at SCOPA, whether it's Sunday Times a while ago, whether it's in this committee, my answer is always the same. The Human Rights Council of South Africa was at that point in time tasked with writing down this whole process of what they call APOS, which is now PPP. So every meeting that was held was minuted, and everybody that was at that meeting's name was registered. And every time my name pops up in Parliament or in the newspapers as one of these people, but nobody wants to go to the Human Rights Council's documents and see whether I was present or not. Of course, I wasn't present. So I agree with you. This has to be laid to bed. I had to go to with my lawyers to the Sunday Times. My children have read in the newspapers that I was involved in this javelin throwing. And it upset my children a lot. So if you can pressurize that gets done, I will appreciate it. In terms of Mr. Self, the Rolls-Royce operation, we get a contract. We have to deliver that. If we don't deliver it, we get a penalty. If we don't get penalties, we try to stay out of that. And therefore, we have to deliver what government wants. The long sentences is a cause of concern. I think that everybody can say that.
In South Africa, in the system, we are sitting with a Kokstad maximum, super maximum prison. I don't think it's half full, I don't know, but as far as I have heard, that they've got about 1,000 places still there. But still, the private sector sits with it. And of course, I think the committee is right in saying that if that you sit with these type of people that they're never going to release, why should we pay you to rehabilitate them and give them a lot of programs? There's value in it. I've seen a person that I've, in another prison, stabbed another inmate 115 times. We taught him to read and write. And I think he's fit for release now. So not everybody is as bad as the sentence lengths show. But there has to be intervention. And if government wants to change the category, we are willing to engage in discussions around that. In terms of the lady with regards to the racial makeup, I don't have that with me. I can't remember. I think it was you, ma'am, that had asked the question. I would guess at the Mankowoon prison, about 10% of the inmate population will be white. There are a few Indians. There's more and more colored coming in from the Western Cape, where the Brandfly bunch came in. But if you want the exact detail, I can forward that to Cindy, if you want to. In terms of the Dhaka question, there's currently none of my staff that's on suspension with or without pay. Everybody's back at work. In terms of the searches, the Dhaka that we have found was, as I said, they come into the prison to the gate and we search them there. That's where we find the Dhaka. There was two times that I remember that there was Dhaka in a unit and we thought that they would have pushed up their body orifice to get it in, and therefore the searching didn't reveal it, because you can't invade people's privacy if you don't have any intelligence with regards to that. There was one issue where staff brought in Dhaka. We got the intelligence system warned of it, and we got the police to arrest him outside, and he's currently not in my employ. So, Mr. Frist, the best practices, what we can do more, I would really like if somebody can tell me. We have meetings every 3 months with the department where we invite them to come, and we have specific topics which we think we've done enough research on internationally that we can say this is a best practice. We then present it to them. Mr. Markle and his office regularly attends such meetings, as well as some of the people of the region. And we are engaging the head office that they send more policymakers to that, because it's one thing to tell a person on ground level this can be done. He said it's not our policy. So that is one thing, but we are engaging. In terms of the model of shareholding, I think that differs from company to company. We just decided at that point in time that 20% of our shareholding will be held by the local community, and that pays for from math classes and math and science classes for matriculants to get through. The trust is doing a lot of that. That's just the structure. We thought that that is the best structure, and we like the one of getting the community involved so that some of the dividend flow flows to the community. That's our structure. In terms of, I can't remember who our number six was. That's a gentleman that nobody answered so far. I don't know the 39th report, and I think it has nothing to do with it. So sorry, but I see nobody has answered you so far on that one. Mr. Ben Fiefler, the youth selection one is a debate as long as I can remember in this. We have not been approached by the DCS, and no negotiations have started, although Mr. Motseke has put it on the agenda, Joe, for one of these next meetings. So it's still alive and well. We currently see an increase in the category of 35 and under. But I think that in this discussion with Mr. Motseke, that will be taken forward. But I agree with you, there is some value in that. In terms of gangsterism, I think that is an interesting one that you said how the Western Cape is dealing with it. You have to remember that we cannot put a person on a bus. I can't tell an inmate, if you don't cooperate here or you don't go to classes, you're going back to correctional services. We had an incident where an inmate 3-4 years ago had killed another incident. He went to court. He told the judge, I'm going to do it again. I asked for that person to be transferred to Kokstad. I'm still waiting for a reply. So because we don't have control over who's transferred away from us, we can just register it. But the fact is I think that's some way to scare people.
But it goes from the premise that inmates want to change and they want to be in programs. That is not always true for the category of people that we have. If they have to decide whether I'm going to program and learn how to read and write, or whether I'm going to go to a prison which is overcrowded, I may get some benefits there, I'm closer to my family, I can give you a letter that going to education to learn and write is not a priority in most of the profile of the people that I know. So gangsterism, I've been to your committee twice to tell you in terms of how we deal with gangs and the gang strategy, which seems to be effective. But the fact is that the person is a gangster. When he goes to corrections, he's getting transferred to us. He doesn't leave his gangster attitudes behind. He needs to be managed. Therefore, if the question is, do you have gangs? Yes, we have. And the reason why is because they are transferred being a gang member, and you know they can't just stop. Gangsters, I don't know if you know this, they can't become non-gangs because then their life is threatened. They can become inactive. So we're focusing on them with activities to get them inactive. So that parole, yes, we have a parole committee. It's next door to us. It's a Grootvlei one. They come to us and they see our inmates. So there is a parole committee. We fit into correctional services, a strategy as well as these structures with this. Ms. Davids, in terms of your question, in terms of agriculture activity, we have that horticulture gardens. We don't have a farm like Grootvlei next door where inmates can work. Specifically, with our penalty regime, if you have a farm, and you will remember, if you go back in statistics, you will find that a lot of inmates used to run away from work bans on farms. So the more they curtailed that, the less the escapes became in terms of the statistics that you see. We don't have that. We buy all our food through our contractor that does the catering, and we force him to buy from local BE. So that is in place. And not only BEE, but local BEE. There are specific targets in the contract that we have to reach to around local empowerment and black BEE. If we don't reach it, that penalty can be anything from 1 million to 5 million, even up at this point in time. So that's something that we keep close tabs on. In terms of the utilities, the sustainability of it, and as you see, if you talk about EFCOM, everybody went go red. EFCOM is a problem. We will have to find ways, and we have looked at solar power being in Bloemfontein, and that seems to be a viable option, and we are now basically putting the business plan together. That can cut some of the cost off in terms of that. Of course, if we install it, we have to get government's approval because it's a change of specification, but we will go through that loop as soon as the sustainability investigation has been done, but it looks positive at this point in time. We don't have a problem in terms of water. The municipality provides. It's only that sometimes you have a cut-up when they have to cut in a new township. We have a reservoir on site, and we can manage that reservoir to give us water for about 5 days. So we have enough contingencies in place that is not a specific problem. The gentleman in front, do we have gangsters? I think I've answered that. They come as gangsters from correctional services. If I have to talk on gangsters, I'll talk a year. But it can be an interesting one. The sexual violent crimes. We have a policy, and we had this policy long before government basically got to it. If inmates comes in, they basically can go for HIV testing. And that HIV testing basically have to be with consent. So we can't force anybody to go for that test. They have to say, I want to go for that test. So everybody that comes into the prison is not tested because they have to give consent, but we brief them on it, but they don't go for the test. And we have found that they only go for that test if there's some other high-risk behavior on their side. So that's the first one. Then we are, like correctional services, have to supply condoms. So consensual sex is allowed to the same extent that it's allowed in DCS. If anybody complains that there was some sexual activity that was not consensual, we give that, I think it's called prophylactic drugs, to both the perpetrator and the victim to ensure that they don't pick up the disease. So I can't give you an answer whether people have checked in negatively and checked positively, because in terms of the system and how it works, you can't force people to test, check. But I can say is if there's an act and if there's a complaint, they get the medication. Any risk about of inmates escaping? I want to see a prison that doesn't have that risk. We have done, after the we had one escape in this 8, 9 years. And after that, we have added an additional fence to the facility, and therefore we didn't have any attack so far. Even with this little unrest, we didn't have an attack on the fence. So I think that the fence is secure. What people need to realize, the safer your fence is, the more chance of a hostage through your entry door. And we've got plans in place to deal with that. I don't think that you will easily find a prison operator that says there's no chance for escape. People are inside the prison, which is a very safe environment, and you can curtail that. Then people need to go to hospital, they have to go to court, and cash in transit, ICE in South Africa, has become an art form. So the chance of being hit on the road is always high. So I will not be so bold to say that we will not have a risk of transit for escape. We had one in 8, 9 years. And that was unfortunate. And that was the questions that was posed, I think.
We're going to break for a 10-minute tea break, and then we'll allow you to answer questions. We will come back to members that feel their questions weren't adequately responded to. So let's be back here at 25 past, and we will then immediately go to the next management team and take it from there.
Gentlemen, I'd like to respond to the question of the cost to the state. I think it's a very long ongoing confusion that has been around. With the PPP process, the asset, the prison itself, belongs to the government from day one and does so for the 25-year period. The cost of that is borne by the private sector by the raising of debt from the beginning. So the cost comparison has to be compared between the debt that is raised when the prison is built and then paid off, and then the operational side of the prison, which is very broadly comparable with DCS. And that is according to the service levels that we are contractually obliged to provide at all times, and which we do in partnership and with consultation with the government, with DCS. So throughout the life of the contract, we're in a partnership with the government, with DCS, and it's an ongoing partnership where we do everything together along our contractual compliance mandate. At this point, we have our service levels are always guaranteed, and the contract also makes provision for levels of spend throughout the area to go to affirmable business enterprises. Those are black-owned enterprises, and in partnership with procurement in the area and black empowerment in the area, we deliver on that contract by making sure that our spend goes to people who would not previously have had any job or any business in the area. So that's a big plus for the economic multiplier effect in the area. I'd like to just address the other question. I was involved in the first prison on javelin throwing. We had no director on our board that was involved in the prison negotiations. Never had that happen. We do have a couple of staff from DCS, but out of 600 staff, I think it's four, and we have no directors on our board that were ever involved in contract negotiation. From the outset, I think that's pretty important to clear up, because that's something that we're quite proud of. that all our staff are trained from the area, and most of our staff have come into this profession, some of them never having worked before, and they've been trained from within and from the area, most of them black, many of them women, and we're quite proud of our track record in that regard. I'd like to hand over to Mr. Pillay to deal with some of the other operational questions that have been asked.
Thank you, Kelly. Chairperson, in response to the other questions that have been raised, I think the question that followed related to the inmates and the classification at these facilities. I think a point had been made around the term and length of sentence of the inmates that occupy each of these facilities. And given that there are high-quality programs and rehabilitation interventions that are ongoing at these facilities, are these individuals going to benefit and make use of the programs and vocational studies that they're exposed to? Chairperson, from our perspective, we have no problem with engaging the department on the issue of reclassification, and we know that the topic has been raised by Commissioner Mutseki, and we look forward to further discussions in that regard. So at this stage, I think the only comment I'll make is that we are aware of the fact that the issue has been raised by the Department of Correctional Services, and we do look forward to further engagement on the matter. As regards the question on the racial mix of prisoners, I do not have the information immediately available, but I will forward that on to the committee. Suffice to say, a large percentage of the prisoner population are African males. We have smaller percentages made up of Indian, colored, and white males. But the exact percentages will be forwarded on to this committee as soon as possible. Questions were raised about DACA being in the facilities, and I know it had been mentioned by my colleague, Mr. Penta. We have had incidences of DACA attempts to be brought into the facility. At least three staff members have been suspended and subsequently dismissed for these contraventions. And we run quite an extensive program with regards to detection and monitoring of DACA smuggling into the prison. Various efforts have been made by people to bring DACA into the prison, and fortunately, via intelligence gathering methods and also the use of sniffer dogs, we've been able to stop them at the gates of the facility. With regards to the issue of best practice and transfer of information between the PPP prisons and DCS, we have various interactions with members of correctional services, and that's not only limited to interacting with the controllers who are based on site, but it's also interacting with the local correctional services employees at the public facilities that are quite close by. Members of correctional services who travel from Pretoria to visit the facility. Not only do we have a variety of inspections that are conducted at the facility, but there are also a variety of interactions that are held with the department directly with regards to operational issues so that there can be a transfer process that occurs. We encourage a greater interaction and greater involvement with the department, and we have absolutely no problem in furthering the interests of skills transfer and best practice transfer with the department. As regards the question around the shareholding structure, I think the question revolved around the one entity having five shareholders as opposed to the other entity having two shareholders, and it seemed like it was a majority international shareholding. I think as we've alluded to, the different companies are set up in different ways. The South African Custodial Services entity is jointly held by Kansani Corrections, which is a 100% black-owned entity. It's a level one empowered company, which is a fairly significant rating to obtain in terms of the empowerment scorecard and the various pillars that have to be achieved. And Kansani Corrections represents a broad base of shareholders as well, which we reveal on an annual basis in our affidavit. Secondly, we have set up an employee trust at Kansani Corrections Management for the benefit of all black staff employed by Kansani at the prison. So in terms of sort of expanding that that view or knowledge on South African custodial services, I think that would be my comment on the issue. With regards to the question on the parole board, yes, parole boards and case management committees do sit at the facility. Whenever the parole board makes a decision and it results in the release of a prisoner, the prisoner is then immediately administered with regards to release. Obviously, the system works such that we cannot release the prisoner directly into society. It's got to go through a pre-release phase, which is actually run by the Department of Correctional Services themselves. The question related to the enhancement of agricultural skills and procurement of agricultural products from small farmers, I think it has been pointed out that horticultural skills are delivered, or horticultural training is delivered at the prison to prisoners. Our food service subcontractor is required to make use of local black suppliers with regards to the food and meat that's required in the kitchen. To the extent that this engages or brings in small local black farmers, I don't have that information readily available, but I am quite willing to obtain that and forward that onto the committee. The impact of the Eskom price increase, there has been the impact of the announced price increase has been quite significant. And we as a company have looked at various measures in terms of minimizing or reducing our energy usage at the facility. And those have included a strategy around cogeneration. Concentrated solar energy is an extremely expensive technology to deploy at any facility, but it's something that we are investigating at the moment. What we've also looked at is isolation of electricity usage distribution boards. Generally, what seems to happen in large facilities is that you have major points of electricity distribution and you aren't able to then control and isolate electricity usage and management. By breaking down your circuits into smaller areas, you are able to understand which areas are using the most and then focus on those areas in terms of trying to enhance efficiency, and that's worked extremely well. In terms of us lowering our electricity usage. Water, as we've alluded to, has been a problem for two reasons. The Makado area does have a water shortage, coupled with the fact that there is an infrastructure problem. The pipes that are used to transport the water are extremely old and are prone to bursting from time to time, which also creates a problem in terms of supply and delivery of water. So the emergency water system that we've installed at the facility ensures that water is constantly available for use by prisoners, and we also have the ability to shut down certain non-essential water usage areas for the purposes of keeping the pressure in our inner ring water delivery system as high as possible. I think the question on gangsterism has been answered by my colleague, Mr. Spencer. Gangsterism is something that is present in Kutama as well. It's not something that you can easily eliminate, but it's very well managed by the fact that all prisoners are engaged in some activity or the other during the course of the day, either recreation, educational, social work activities, psychological programs. The fact of the matter is that a prisoner is out of cell 8 hours a day. He's engaged in some form of activity. His ability to engage and interact with his fellow gang members is minimized to a large extent. So gang activity is kept to an absolute minimum as far as best as can be managed in the facility. Sexual violent crimes between inmates and related to the question on whether inmates enter the facility HIV negative and leave HIV positive. I think, again, Mr. Spencer's assisted in answering the question by virtue of the fact that while drug testing is mandatory for all prisoners, HIV testing isn't. It's a voluntary testing that offenders may allow. And for all intents and purposes, without the information being available, one only understands or knows that an offender is HIV positive when certain symptoms start to manifest themselves. So it's extremely difficult to understand whether or not the prisoner contracted the HIV virus while in prison or before he entered prison. In terms of sexual activity where it's consensual between partners, condoms are made available to staff, and similarly prophylactic drugs are available where sexual assault has occurred. The question around the risk of escape, I think every prison has a risk of escape. We've been blessed in that we've not had a single escape from the facility. I think there's only been one attempt ever to try and escape from the facility, but it was quite adequately handled. The risk is always there, and it's about managing the security envelopes within your facility to ensure that that risk is minimized or eliminated altogether. And we constantly work very hard. I think the worst thing that could ever happen in any correctional center is complacency. Ensuring that you are constantly vigilant and ensuring your security systems are dynamic to identify any risk issues around escape are absolutely vital in ensuring that escape does not occur. I'd like to hand over to my colleagues if they would like to hand anything, add anything more, Chairperson.
Will there be anything still outstanding?
Can I just add a few comments to my colleagues' responses? First of all, on the cost, I think an IGNIS report was presented to the Portfolio Committee a number of years ago. That concluded that the private sector costs were broadly comparable with the public sector. I think that report is a few years old now, but it's probably even more relevant now because there's only been CPI-related increases to the private sector. But again, we extend our offer to cooperate fully in any benchmarking exercise to make sure that apples are being compared with apples. In terms of the DACA issue, we also are constantly vigilant in terms of people trying to smuggle DACA in. We have dismissed several officials who have been caught trying to smuggle DACA in. I think only in the last week or so we won a CCMA case where an employee appealed against his dismissal, saying first of all he didn't do it, and secondly if he did it wasn't that serious. Fortunately the commissioner disagreed with him on both counts and we won that particular case. In terms of sustainability of utilities, certainly for new facilities, we're looking at alternative sources of power, and we are looking at ways of minimising current usage and looking at alternative supplies. And I think in terms of gangsterism and HIV, I think both the private parties have very similar processes in place to manage those particular risks. That's all.
Right. Thank you very much. Yes, I'll come to you, comrade. A slight shift. My memory box is very small, so I'll just take two or three questions and get answers, so that we don't lose them. But before I give the comrades who have questions to ask, let me just clear one or two issues. Firstly, from our scopa perspective, one, it is that our resolution on the cost-benefit analysis has not been responded to. We have not received any information in that regard. Two, the list of names of departmental officials who were part of the negotiations with the companies, who then resigned to join these companies, that was never attended to fully. A list was sent to me by the then Acting Commissioner Jabu Sishuba, which list she came back to indicate that it was incorrect because it included names of pastors who were there to administer, to preach for the inmates, and even nurses who had come to attend to the sick. So she withdrew that list to go and
have it redone. A second list was sent, which she again confirmed that it was incomplete. The major problem being that there was no documentation in the department. Documents in relation to the negotiations process were lost, were not there. She was going to come back to me with a final or comprehensive list, and that never came. So that was not addressed. I don't want to go into some of the issues around the triple P, because I know we've discussed this question in scope on not less than two occasions with the department. And on each of those occasions, we have not been given answers that were satisfactory. So I've tried to listen, and I still want to listen. Maybe I will be able to come out of here with a better understanding or a different understanding. But so far, I still want to listen. I think I still need to listen more to have a better perspective on this issue. Right. Let me get the comments who want to ask questions. I'll take two or three, but if I have many questions, I'll stop at two, so that we don't have questions that are lost. And I'll request the response to be very brief and pointed, so that we don't get information overlooked. I want to start with people who have not said a word. Comrade Tomijan, Luena Me. Let me take the two. Comrade Tomijan.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question will relate much towards monitoring of compliance, Chairperson. Maybe before I even ask it, can I then request that the department furnish us with a copy of the contract that they've entered into with the two entities? Because it will then make us to be able to understand what they've agreed in terms of, you know, the contract. Thank you. In the light of that,
can we have that in a week's time? What?
Excuse me. I wanted to get from the department when they are conducting monitoring, which specific area they've identified to be challenging to the two entities. And if the challenges are related to finance, Chairperson, I would want to check whether the auditors confirmed that particular challenge that the two entities happen to have financial challenges in relation to the contract implementation. So I'm saying this because the department would know that the law, in particular Public Finance Management Act, calls on them to say before they transfer any money to any entity, they must satisfy themselves that the entity is compliant. It is in that context that I wanted them to be specific and tell us which are the areas that the two entities are experiencing challenges in implementing. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first thing I want to say that the questions of the members of the committees were not answered at all. And the concern is threatening us when we are asking questions. And we have to ask questions in terms of the delivery, the value we want for the finance government is giving to PPP. I think we are not so, to my personal view, I'm not very friendly for PPPs. In terms of this one, I can't cater or I can't see whether we are getting the service delivery we are looking for. Financially, I can't also trace whether this service is cost effective, there is an impact in terms of what we are looking for society. Secondly, the youth inmates that are also in this PPP, for me, there was a resolution. I've read this in the document because I see this is a long-standing, outstanding, unanswered questions about whether there is a process that we're embarked on, what is the progress of that process in terms of making this more for the youth than for elderly people of 88 years old. So I've got many questions to ask Chairperson, but it's unnecessary questions I'll have to ask because when I read through all these documents, I can see that there are unfinished business according to our finances as government that are not answered and is not answered yet, yes, and will never be answered because if we want questions answered, answers for our questions, we are threatened. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, not today. Ask all the questions that you have as long as we have time. Can we get a response to these two questions before we allow others?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not so sure if I got the question from Mr. Tobijano well, but I'll attempt to answer. In terms of monitoring, we have four officials on site. That is the controller, the deputy, and two other officials on site to monitor the contract daily. That is from Schedule A up to Schedule D. All specifications in terms of those schedules. And I'm not aware of any challenges financially which relates to the monitoring because even from our office, we do have monthly meetings and during those monthly meetings.
So what you're saying is that there is absolute compliance. That's the long and the short of what you're saying.
Yes, I'm saying in terms of if there is no compliance, the contract says that we must issue a notice of breach. And for those...
No. Okay. What you want to find out is in monitoring compliance, do you have problems? Do you find any challenges? So it's either you say there are no challenges, everything is smooth, or yes, there are challenges. These are the areas where we have challenges.
I'm not aware of...
Thank you, Chair. There are challenges that are there, although there are few. One that I can mention, which...
No. Just tell us all of them. So there are few. Which are these? One?
Okay. The first one is that if there is an observation which you would not classify as a breach, especially if there is a death in prison, you need an inquest report from police to confirm the reason why that inmate died is because it was unnatural because he died of blows and all that. There is a delay in getting inquest from the police. Hence, some of the cases are long outstanding. That is the challenge that we have now in actually monitoring the contract. I think the other one has already been mentioned about the request for transfers of the inmates. That while the programs are running, while we are saying that these programs are actually advantageous to them, in the middle of the programs they are requesting for transfers. That is a challenge for both the department and also the contractor because you cannot accede to that.
All right. I think your answers do not respond to the question. The question talks to compliance by the contractor.
Okay.
Compliance from their side in terms of implementing the content of the contract. When you monitor compliance, are the areas where they are failing to comply with the letter and the spirit of the contract?
No.
No, not at all. No, that's fine. I think that's it.
can we, although I see here in this slide presentation from Kutama Sintumule, well, they're not numbered, but on challenge, one of their challenges maintain contractual compliance record. You see, that is a challenge from their side. And from your side, you don't see a challenge. Mangaung, to manage the contract cost effectively without impeding on service delivery. They see these as challenges, but from where you are, there are no challenges.
Can I respond? Chairperson, I think it is a challenge to them, but it has not gone to an extent where we have issued an observation notice on the bridge.
We are very lenient.
No, Chairperson, because
if they see that as a challenge for themselves and you see it as a non-issue, it means they are tough on themselves, and yet you, whereas you are very lenient. All right, can I find out from the gentleman, what do you mean by the challenge of maintaining contractual compliance record?
Chairperson, if I may respond, the issue highlighted there was that we maintain 100% contractual compliance record throughout the 7 years of operation. I think the statement was made consistently around the ensuring that it remains cost effective, because these contractual compliance requirements do generate high amount of costs that are required in terms of maintaining the operation going forward. But we endeavor as a private contractor to continue to deliver those on those obligations. I think you're probably quite right to say it in the statement that yes, we probably are harder on ourselves than we should be.
I don't understand you. Unless if others understand you. Simple question is, what do you mean by the challenge of maintaining contractual compliance record?
Mr. Chairman, can I just respond quickly to that? Our compliance record is 100%, and I think the supervisory committee have issued a report after visiting the facility, examining all our records in great detail. When we say the challenge is to maintain that, we do have challenges with suppliers in terms of uniform supply. We have to go and sit on suppliers. We have to go and visit suppliers. We have to coach suppliers. If we have an issue with delivery of food, we will run into town. We will buy plates if we need to. Every single day, we make sure all the searches are conducted on a daily basis. We have extensive unit management in terms of the supervisory level.
A correctional centre is a hostile environment. Complacency is our biggest risk. We work very, very hard each and every day, and the majority of our staff also work very, very hard each and every single day to make sure we maintain that. It would be foolish of us to sit here and
so
say
from
what
time
we're doing
to time
is easy.
Things fall between the cracks.
We have advanced warning systems. We have extensive security things. Things will go wrong in a prison environment. You have 3,000 inmates looking at ways they can break systems.
That's fine. Let's do this. Let's leave that one. Maybe the members understand. I'm the one who does not understand. From your side, can you talk to that sentence?
Yes.
I mean, from your explanation, then you do not need that sentence at all.
First of all, the way that we look at it, there's a contractual requirement. In other words, you have to deliver everything in that contract. Say, for instance, the contract says you have to feed inmates 3 times a day, you have to do it 3 times. If it gives a time, then it gives a time, and you have to do it within that time. Contractual compliance basically means that if you don't, they write you a notice, you respond to that, and say, but we did that. We haven't been found guilty this year and been penalized for such offense. So contractual compliance is there. The department is basically checking compliance through various structures. First one is the controller that's on site. There's 4 of those staff. They go around, they see something, they ask, why did you do this? The contract says this. We give our explanation. If they don't agree with that, that goes to a supervisory committee. They bring out an annual report, and that, I think that's available to yourself. Public Works comes and inspects us every second year now to see whether we are maintaining the contract, the buildings to the requirements of the contract, and that report should be available to you, but they didn't fault us on that. The external auditor in terms of maintenance, it's an external person that comes once a year. He gives us a report in terms of, do we maintain this building, not according to the contract, but what they expect of a building to be maintained. That report is available. The auditor general visits us once a year. They do an inspection. They haven't faulted us on anything. And then, of course, our internal auditors. So if you look at, you contract us to do a specific service. There's a lot of checks and balances to look whether we have followed that. If not, it goes to a committee with a legal person. They decide whether this contract has been delivered or not. This year we have delivered the contract. So that's the short answer in terms of Bloemfontein. In terms of all these other mechanisms that's available in terms
all
of
right.
the building and those type of things, that inspection goes on. And we haven't been faulted on the building as yet in the last few years.
Okay, let's talk to the second question. The issue around the youth is a long outstanding question. Why is it still an ongoing issue when it's been long on the table?
Chair, I would be honest that the first meeting that I attended, it was raised, and I hope in the next meeting that we are going to have, it's going to be will provide progress of the meeting. But previous to that, I cannot give an answer why it has been long after that.
Who would have the answer?
It should be correction.
And do you represent correction?
I'm representing supply chain.
What is correction? Is correction a unit within the department or?
Yes, it's a unit within the department that is dealing with corrections and then classifications. Yes.
All right. Let's hope in the next meeting there will be a conclusive response to the issue. Okay. You can switch off the mic, please. Thank you. You want to make a follow-up? Just a quick follow-up.
Chairperson, prior to the follow-up, I think it will be appropriate to warn the presenters here that misrepresentations of facts is offense, and then you can be prosecuted for that, particularly to Parliament, because they keep on going to and front, and then they understand that they are contradicting themselves. You may suspect that somewhere there's no truth in the whole statement that they're giving to us. But nonetheless, I'm saying the follow-up is to say on the 7th and 8th year, respectively, of their operations, the two entities, are they then saying all their annual reports, audit report, have been saying they've been doing perfect for the past 7 and 8, respectively, as they've been operating?
Just a yes or no answer.
The Auditor General reports, I don't see. In terms of the Inspectorate report, last year they said that they found bread in a drawer of an inmate in his cell. That is not a contractual outcome. So in terms of contractual outcomes, we deliver what we need to deliver.
Chairperson, I could only imagine the supervisory committee reports that may be referred to in terms of our own audit reports. We've never received a qualified opinion on our audit reports. In terms of the supervisory committee reports, there has been no issue of contractual non-compliance that has been raised.
Right. Thank you. Yes, comrades, and then Honorable Steele, and then I'll come to you, Comrade Bono.
Thank you, Chair. I come to another dimension. I regard these two prisons as the safest prisons in South Africa. They're secured, everything. But
what I want to know is that do you, are all the members of the staff vetted? Because the greatest challenge today, unlike other years, that is this last decade, we've got the most sophisticated prisoners, criminals, I'll put it that way. That is those who have got a lot of money to buy. That's why corruption is so eminent in corrupt service. They are able to buy, they can put money on the table to say, want this, as they did at Simex prison, put 20,000, want a gun. Now, we're dealing with that type of inmate that we have never been dealing with. They're sophisticated, they're professional. Now, I just want to know, you who have got all the facilities, are you able to come to the help of the correctional service to say that type of inmate, bring it to that type of inmate bring it to our prison because we are safer. They're safer here. They can't escape. They can't do. They can't bribe anybody. Not at all. So that's the situation today. So they've got millions, many of them. Yeah. And the worst part of it is that some of them are foot soldiers, and the bosses are still out, and some of them are untouchable. They are known by the prison. They are known by police. They are untouchable because they've got a lot of money. Now, how are you able to help now the prison, that is the correctional service, with your safety, with all the facilities that you've got in the world, the best of facilities? Thank you.
Honorable Tim.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm very concerned about some of the answers that we've had so far, the explanations we've had so far. I'd just like to touch on a couple, though. First, there was a comment by one of the contracting officials here surrounding the whole issue of benchmarking in terms of setting standards for the monitoring of compliance. And he said that they would be very happy to provide input into this benchmarking exercise. Now, I'm quite sure that they are very happy, but my question for the DCS is, why do they have to make suggestions of this kind? What is the problem with the department that they cannot actually establish the benchmarks for best practice with or without the contractors even having to offer that? I just don't understand why that should even be still something that is discussed. Why has it not been established? What are the benchmarks for best practice so that we can all monitor for compliance according to the same standards? So I'd really like the department to explain that one, please. And secondly, Chair, another quick follow-up question, if I could. We were told that there are four officials at each of these centres monitoring compliance. I'm sorry, but that really doesn't sound to me like the best way of monitoring compliance, to have four people permanently there, part of the staff. You know, with all due respect, they just aren't going to do the best kind of monitoring if they are there as a permanent part of the staff. And surely somebody's thought about that one too.
Comrade Bono. Comrade Chair, you know, I'm really pleased the report on these two prisoners. You know, they're hardened criminals, and they seem to be well run, and the prisoners are made very comfortable in all ways, it seems like. If they're made so comfortable, like, you know, that they even get supplied condoms, you know, and they're even allowed to sodomize each other. And nobody likes to be sodomized. But yet HIV and AIDS is growing there. And who gets sodomized? It's the vulnerable, the weak, and the young. They get it. They get the death penalty. what is stuck in there. And on top of all, to say, look at that, that, you know, it's under the human rights, they can't forcibly test anybody for HIV. And the person must be tested with their consent. Now, you can't tell me that the human rights accept and support sodomization of the vulnerable, the youth, the weak. There's something wrong in the system. And there's something that I wonder if they can answer this. How many of the inmates have been brought forward and charged with rape or sodomizing the youngster? That's actually is my question. Have any been charged? Have any been charged for rape? Any been brought forward? How do these children come in there? They go in there and they say, look, well, I'm going to go, I made my mistake. I'm going to pay my penalty. I'm going for my 10 years. When I come up there, my penalty is paid to society. I'm a free man. But they're coming out with a, full of AIDS, with a death sentence. And a lot of people go in and they come out to be decent people of society. They want to go to work. They want to put their lives in order. But the prison itself destroys them. I'd just like to know, have any of those prisoners, and if the human rights support sodomization, and if any support, how many have been reported to be raped or sodomized? Thank you, Chair.
All right. I think the first question goes to you gentlemen about your staff, how they vetted. And the second part of the question, I think, has to deal with the policy of referring or sending prisoners to these two facilities. With their policy, what is the policy that's being used? And I think the last two are quite clear. They should, yeah, they could be answered from by any one of you.
Thank you, Jay. In terms of the question whether all our staff is vetted, the answer is yes. Can we pick inmates or influence the department who they are sending to us? Currently, they have a policy that gives criteria. We don't have any choice. We have to accept. I think that if one could have influenced that, one would have said that people that need to be kept in a safe environment should be there. But in terms of value for money, it's also people that want to rehabilitate and be part of programs.
And what measure you will get that specific mix of person?
I do not know, but I think it can be done to some extent. In terms of benchmarking for compliance, I think that if you look at the compliance that's needed to run a private prison, you will see that there's a lot of requirements that we have to deliver that's not, for one or other reason, an outcome that correctional services is delivering. So the compliance in our one is much higher, and they expect much more of us than on themselves. So if they want to do a benchmarking in all prisons, specifically ours, I think that the contract is quite clear, and we will assist because we also learn from best practices in America and the UK, and we are bringing that to South Africa. So that's stuff that needs to be shared to grow the whole correctional system to a better one. The four officials of DCS is not part of my staff. It's part of correctional services staff. They have separate offices. And as explained previously, in terms of the inspectorate, the external auditors, there's a lot of audits that's being done over and above the four people that they have on site on a 24-hour basis or on a shift system. In terms of the question with regards to should one allow condoms and those type of stuff, that's policies, some of them are international guidelines. We need to follow them. Should they change, we will change with them. In terms of how many people was charged in terms of alleged sodomy, I can just at this point in time say that I know of people that we gave the opportunity, we give everybody the opportunity to lay a charge. I will find out how many of those charges were laid and how many of them went before the court, because that's the SAPS that investigate that, but I will send that to the chairperson or to the secretary. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think with regards to the answer on the question of are all members of staff vetted, yes. Every single member of staff goes through a security clearance and a check, and it's a precursor to employment. And all of those applications are then forwarded on to DCS as well as part of the notification to them. With regards to the assistance to DCS in housing dangerous criminals, I think, again, Mr. Fenter has alluded to the fact that we do not have a choice in which criminals are sent to our centres. As soon as a vacancy is available, an offender is placed in either one of the centres. We have, on occasion, the department with dangerous criminals that they required to be housed, and we've housed them in our segregation units. But those are were short-term solutions that were offered to the department. I think we as a contractor, we have no problem in engaging the department on that matter as well. I think with regards to the other two questions, I felt they were targeted primarily at DCS as well for answering. With regards to the DCS, why can the DCS not conduct a benchmarking practice of, exercise itself? And as regards to the four people monitoring the contract, they do not form part of the contract. The staff, they have their own offices, their own server.
No. That's why I know those
things.
The department will answer.
Okay.
Maybe the last one on number of charges laid for sodomy or rape.
Once again, Chairperson, I think the response from our side is that we always allow offenders to lay charges of assault. I do not have figures as to how many convictions resulted from these cases appearing before court, but I will obtain that information and forward it onto the portfolio committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the issues of benchmarking, as because we are responsible for contract management, we have invited also the other branches and give them all the monthly reports about the outcomes and work that is being performed by the two PPP prisons, so that in case they need to benchmark, they can actually do that. But what has been raised as a challenge for the department, one is the overcrowding. Every time there is always that comparison that there is overcrowding in our facilities. And the other challenge that has been raised is in our lack of ability to retain staff that is critical, especially when it comes to rehabilitation, like your psychologists, your doctors, your social workers, your nurses. That has been a challenge for the department, and which makes it difficult, although they would want to benchmark with the two PP prisons. But when it comes to that, especially to the rehabilitation, that is a problem. The issue of the policy of transfers, all the maximums must be considered for transferred if there is a vacancy in the either of the two. But as we know that maximums are difficult to get. So what the department has done is to create a pool next to these two PP prisons so that when the need arises to replace if there is an incident of death or there is a transfer, that they can actually easily facilitate the transfer. Where it becomes a problem, it's a transfer that is initiated by the inmate himself. That becomes a problem, and especially because it comes at random in the middle of these programs that are being implemented. That is what the department at the moment is actually seriously looking at, as to how can we have perhaps one specific period which can be considered for the transfers. That is what they are dealing with at the moment.
Right. Yes, comrade, and then you follow, comrade.
In the slide, it's written death due to natural causes reduced.
last month we had commissioners here. We read their reports here of natural death. It was rocketing. But today it's written here reduced. And when we ask them what are the cause of this natural death, they say they don't have reports. Even today, we get the very same thing, that there are no reports. Where must this committee get the reports? The next question, I had the presentation telling us here that they decided to close the factory shoe. Can you please tell us why did you decide to close the factory shoe? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the responses with regard to procurements, it was stated quite clearly that they have a contractual obligation to see to it that the procurement is done from sources which are BEE compliant. Now, we would like, and they won't be able to provide it now, but we would like in writing information with regard to the commodities that are procured, the values involved for specific time frames, and the suppliers. If the suppliers are companies, we would like to know what the company's makeup is, the directorship, shareholdings, etc., so that we can monitor that the contractual obligation is in effect being carried out. And finally, Chair, I think Mangaung mentioned in their presentation that they had a leather factory as part of their facility and that that had closed down, if I heard it correctly. If we could just be told what was the reason. Because if you take in South Africa today, we market a hell of a lot of animals to abattoirs and what have you, but we do not have proper tanneries, and that it would be a shame if we have to close down such facilities. I think there's room for it. Thank you, Chair.
Malau, can you respond to...
Yes, I can. In terms of natural deaths from January to August 14, most of those HIV related. It looks like everything. I can give you the detail, but it looks like everyone was HIV related. I've got the detail here. In terms of the factory shop, in terms of running factories on the prison environment, we get subcontractors in to do that. This one gave it up. He said he didn't want to continue. We couldn't find another one. We have to be careful that if, say, for instance, leather shop opens within the local community, I don't want to have a leather shop as well, because then I take the work from the community inside and people outside is going. But that factory shop was replaced with another factory doing candles. So we basically, if one shop closed, we opened the other one. That was the leather skills programs is still running. We still do that. But the entrepreneur that has started the factory shop, he said that he wasn't financially viable for him. So that's the reason why he stopped working for us, and then we had to find a replacement. Current factory is basically still a clothing factory that runs. The street signs, I think that they are going to give up their contract now, and then, of course, the bakery, which is basically support delivering a lot of bread inside the prison. So I think that one will be viable for some time. We try to get the bakery to give cheaper bread to correctional services. They declined our offer. So that's
the answer. They declined your offer of cheaper bread.
We didn't have it. Our subcontractor doing the catering, sir, had the contract to deliver bread inside our prison as well as to the prison next door. They then stopped that and they went for a more expensive option. I tried to tell them this is more expensive, you're getting it cheaper because we use inmate labor. Tell on deaf ears, and I can only be responsible for so much.
All right.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Death incidences from your side?
Chairperson, I'm going to defer to my colleague who's got the figures on his laptop.
Yes.
Chairperson, while my colleague is picking up the information, with regards to the question on the commodities procured and the values and the shareholding, we will provide that report to the committee, detailing all the aspects that that have been asked for.
Chair, will Mongong do the same, please?
In terms of deaths in custody, we've had seven natural deaths due to natural causes during the course of the
issue. Can you talk to the mic?
For 2009, we've had seven deaths in custody due to natural causes. We can supply the committee with the details on each one of those. In 2003, we had 29. In 2004, we had 27. In 2005, we had 29. In 2006, we introduced a HIV program, and it went down to 11, 11 again in 2007, and 15 in 2008. We can provide as much detail as the committee would like in terms of deaths, all due to natural causes. We find that our numbers were very much in line with the average for DCS, but we have improved, as mentioned on that report,
right,
over the last 2 years.
Okay. All right. So it's the commissioners who don't have the information. The two facilities have the information on their laptops. Right. Yes, Robert.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe just two or three questions from my side. The first question is, in terms of the fixed cost, what is your percentage escalation? Zero.
In terms of fixed cost means that it's fixed for the duration of that, so there's a year duration.
All right. In terms of operational cost, your operational costs are based on the number of spaces available. Correct. Thanks. And in the last year, both of you ran at 100% occupancy. So therefore, it means there should be no escalation in your contracts because your fixed costs have no escalation. Last year, your operational costs were based on the number of beds available, which is exactly the same as the year before. So there should be no change in that, isn't it? Is my understanding correct? It is, for me, that young lady, Mr.
You're Sir. Wrong.
Yes, tell me why.
In terms of, we have a fixed number of beds, but as South Africa has inflation, it's applicable to us as well. So although the price that you guys are paying for bed spaces is on the same number, in terms of the contract, that cost is basically increased with the inflationary figure, which is called CPI. Plus K. So there's a formula in the contract that basically allows us, because else you are going to basically, if we do have no increase and CPI kicks in or inflation kicks in, within 5 years the inmates will not have food because the prices has gone up.
Now, I want to get that understanding. So your increment is based on CPIX. Fine.
CPI,
all right. Fine. I just wanted that understanding. Last year, when I say last year, the increase from 2007-2008-2009 was 9.6%. Increase for this current year, 2008-2009 and 2009-2010, 13%. Now you're saying to me that for the building, there's no increase. The only increase can be on the basis of inflationary increases. And it went up by 12% last year, or this current year? Is that what you're saying? And it went up by 9% the year before? I'm asking that question because I'm looking at the facts here. Yeah.
Can I explain? I think you are only talking of the fixed cost. Fixed cost goes towards the payment of the building only. Then there is the...
No, let me help you. We all agreed that the fixed costs have no increase. We've agreed on that. What I'm saying, the cost to the department has increased. This is in the annual report. Now, I'm raising this question because if you are saying you don't have any increases, then I must ask the department, why are you making accommodation for increases? That's where I'm getting to. In terms of the buildings, the amounts are exactly the same for the past 2 years, exactly the same. In terms of the operational costs, in other words, buying the food or the bed space, let's put it to you that way, there's an increase based on inflation, for want of a better word. That's our understanding. I'm going further, and I'm saying that the increase the previous year was 9.6%. The increase this year is 12.9%. I'm asking you to explain why.
The CPI increased from August 2007 to August 2008 was 13.7%. That's the figure that I have in my head. If that is where CPI have gone, if inflation pushed CPI up with 13.7, the figure that you have given can be correct. Because it's less than CPI, the figure that you have raised. But the period difference.
I'm trying to understand. Is that your understanding as well? It's fine. Because we will certainly follow it up. You see, because I don't understand if things are supposed to be fixed and it goes up by this percent. But it's not your problem. I just want to understand what is your funding model. Because this is something I'll raise with the department when I meet them next time. So that I can indicate to them, this is what you've used as justification in all likelihood. And I will find out from their side what is it that they use. That was the first question. The second one, Chair.
Chair, in terms of the calculation of the price increase, there are two factors. There's the CPI adjustment and what is called a K-factor adjustment, which levels out the payments to the contractor over the life of the project. So in some years it goes up, in some years it goes down, but it's predetermined in the original contract. So when you're checking the increases, you need to look at the CPI factor and the K-factor.
That's fine. Let me put this thing to you differently. We're going to demand the contract because that's what's going to inform us. We're going to demand the contract. I'm asking you as operators, does the increase sound reasonable? Because on the basis of your answer, we will go and do our homework and interrogate it. If it's not reasonable, either you're pulling the wood over the department's eye, or the department is taking us for a ride. I mean, that's why I'm asking the question. Do you think it's a reasonable increase, 9% the year before, 12% this year? What will it be next year type of thing? Because these are the things that will inform us. The trajectory is going in the wrong direction for me. It's going in the wrong direction for me. And therefore, the question that I'll put to the department is why continue? I mean, if we're moving from 9 to 12% in 12, I mean, a 3 percentage point in 1 year, over 5 years, what's the percentage point? And so your argument that the state is saving money is an argument that I could then argue against. I could argue against the fact that we're saving. If this is the rate that we increase, then maybe the department made a mistake by going this route. So these are the reasons why I'm raising it, because we are serious about, one, not creating the same mistake with the other four. And if we can get out of these ones because we think that the wool was pulled over our eyes, we certainly will do that. So it is in that context that I was raising these questions. But I see you want to maybe give us some, because we're going to follow it up further.
Fine. I think that the way to do it is, I agree with you, look at the specific contract, because there the formula is given, and that's agreed with the department. And to give you an idea, we haven't seen a CPI of 13.7 for quite some time in South Africa. If you currently look at the CPI rate, it's about 6%. So I doubt, really, in terms of my financial projections, the increase for this year, for the coming year, will be much less than the previous, and that's purely linked to the CPI increase. I don't know how the government have projected that, but all our projections, I mean, currently Investec as well as EFSA says that next year it's 5.4%. So if you look at then, if it's 5.4 with all these other factors, it cannot be higher than 7.9. So that's the first thing. The other thing that I want, and I picked that up previously, is people look at that component of facilities within the DCS budget.
And that component is not purely PPPs. There's cost in the head office, there's cost for the, what you call it, the independent guy, in our terms, Mr. Elf, that's going to be there. So they budget for more than only the cost in terms of what they pay to the operator. There's other costs, although it may be a very, very small percentage, which I don't know, but the figure that you see totally shouldn't be only for the private operators. And also it's projected against one or other CPI that's unknown to me.
Right. You're creating problems for the department, sir. I've said that I'm not saying you're doing it deliberately. I'm raising it because the department is here. Your current annual report, financial arrangements, it says the department paid on a monthly basis a daily contract fee per available inmate place to private companies, meaning yourself, and it gives us the figures. Okay, and that's where I picked up the increase of 9% and the increase of 13%. Your clarity is that it should in fact be going the other way and not going up. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. It should be going down. This information is giving me a trajectory that it's going up. Do you see what I'm saying? That's why I'm saying inadvertently these individuals from the department will have to explain that, because I agree with you. That it shouldn't be escalating, it should be going the other way. And therefore the budget from the department for this particular project should be following suit.
You respect. In terms of, if South Africa had an inflation rate of less than zero, the price will come down. What we are seeing is that because of inflation, you see a steady decline. What we've seen last year with the CPI of 13.7, that it went up. So it was a steeper hill to climb. This year, what I'm saying, the prices will go up because we still don't have the inflation rate of zero. But it will not go up to the same extent than previously. But it will go up. The only thing in terms of our contract where your price can come down is if you have a negative inflation factor. And the second one is every 5 years there's a rebasing, which you will also find in the contract. And if that formula... we've hit it once, and our prices went down. Physically, the price went down. So there's two ways that the price can come down, and both of them are, the one is CPI linked, and the other one is rebasing every 5 years.
Right. I don't want you to respond. I just want you to understand so that we understand. So that you understand where we're coming from. The cost to the state was 615 million. In 2007-2008. The cost to the state was 675 million, 2008-2009. You with me? And the cost to the state in the next year, according to these young men's presentation, was 700 and something, if memory serves me correctly, in your presentation. 700 and something, isn't it? No, I'm talking about the total cost, fixed and something else, 700. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that from the information given to the South African public, it's going up by 79 million rand a year, roughly. That's what's happening. We will further interrogate it, because I need to understand why it's going up by that amount. No, we're not going to have a dialogue on this one. I'm just saying we will deal with that with the department. But next question I wanted to ask is, and then maybe you don't have it here, if we start with you, Mr. Fenton, the shareholding of Geo Group, are you able to give that to us? Oh, I beg your pardon. No, I beg your pardon. Yes, you're right. The Geo Group. Who are these individuals? Who is Geo Group? I'm saying, if you could give us that. Similarly with South African Custodial Services, because I would imagine these are two different entities.
The one is the shareholder and the other. So, but let me start by answering questions.
Yeah. One is the shareholder, one is the contractor. But I want to know who are the individuals in those two things. Okay. And similarly with G4S, if you could say to us, it's made up of five shareholders, and the shareholders are XYZ company or XYZ individual. If you could give us, not now. If you have it now, we will welcome it now. not now, please give it to us in writing. I think both ourselves and Schofer are interested in it. And just the final questions here. What is the collaboration between the two of you? I mean, do you share best practices? Are there individuals that serve on both entities, or that type of thing? Are you two totally separate, independent structures? Thanks, Chair.
So if I may respond, with regards to the last question that I was asked, no, we do not have co-shareholdings or co-directorships on either of the companies. We are both distinctly individual and separate companies. Just a comment on the question around shareholding of the Geo Group. It is a publicly listed company. So I don't know whether you require the information related to that.
Let's have that information in writing.
Okay.
As you have said, we have no links with each other except that we are in the same industry, we are competitors, and that's why I couldn't follow everything you said. I followed what you said, Chair, but I can't make a view whether that 600, I don't know what they charge government, and for commercial reasons they will not tell me. So that's why I said my proposal will be that I will give you for the last 3 years, in government financial years, which is not ours, our income from government. And if you count mine and his together, you should get where they are. But I propose that both contractors do that to assist you. In terms of shareholding, in terms of G4H, we are a public listed company. We are on a stock exchange in London. In terms of the G4H that you see on the document, I'm a director, Bruce is a director, and I don't have shares in the company.
In writing.
Yeah, all right.
But are there any questions, comrades, in the absence of which we may want to bring this engagement to an end? Well, let me, on behalf of my comrades, thank the Portfolio Committee for having invited us. We sincerely appreciate having been here. Of course, it has been one of our main concerns to enhance integration of our work as committees in Parliament. And, of course, to thank the department and the two private contractors for having come to speak to us. I think in Scopa we've spoken about you, I don't know how many times, and I was pleasantly surprised to see you face-to-face today. And of course, being able to provide us information. I suppose that the information that we have requested, if we can get that within a week, I think it will greatly assist and enhance our work. Chair, I had the invite earlier on that maybe it might be good for you to make a trip, make a tour of the facilities and have a look at what is there. I've had the presentations very carefully. It sounded like a place you wouldn't mind to stay in, from what they were saying. So it might be something that the Portfolio Committee might want to look at. Thanks very much. Thank you, comrades. Meeting is adjourned.